Hello, and welcome to episode number 9 of the 10HP Broadcast, the show that follows our game club as we play through random games from the past few years. I'm your host, Chris Peters, and with me today is Paul Main.
Hello.
Anthony Nguyen.
Good evening.
And Scott LeMay.
Ahoy, ahoy.
Glorious could not make it. He's out sick today. And Ricky really wanted to be here, but had other engagements, unfortunately, because it's very unfortunate, because he has a lot to say about our most recent game. So just a warning for new listeners, this podcast is not concerned with spoilers. So if you haven't played this game, you may get something spoiled for you. And the game in question is Shadowrun Returns. It's technically nominated by the group. It's technically my selection, but the group agreed upon it, bought it for themselves, so it's a little different.
I gotta thank Ricky for my copy.
Ricky got you one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, Ricky.
So, the reason that this game is so attractive is basically everybody in this room played Shadowrun in high school, the pen and paper RPG. So, there's a lot of history and...
Would you like to let them know which edition we played?
Sure. We played edition 2. Second edition.
When was high school?
Yeah, so what year was that second edition again?
What year was second edition?
So I just read it. It said 1996, but we had actually graduated in 95. This book might have just been a reprint.
Okay. Well, it might have been. Which one
maybe
is?
Maybe the hardback has a different
92.
Date. Yeah, 92.
Oh, there okay. You go.
Yeah. So I know I bought a second copy at some point, so that's probably closer to a senior year. But we weren't even playing, I don't think, senior year anymore.
No.
Be surprised by
kudos
that.
On keeping these books, by the way. They're actually still
picked
pretty
up
good.
First edition only within the last year or so. Wow. But yeah, I've been collecting them slowly. And I still have all the other source books and everything. That's all out in the garage. But got all the... Our multiple copies of the BioWare book. What's that called?
Yeah, the one that has the secondary essence value, the body value or something.
Yeah.
That you can get cyberware for the body, but it's not really cyberware.
It's cool. Well, BioWare apparently was in first edition, but that...
Right.
Well, that stuff was in a separate book.
Yeah, it was in a source book in second edition. Anyway, so... I'm a longtime fan of Shadowrun, and this is a tactical RPG. You know, we played XCOM. We like these kind of games, Jagged Alliance. Mm-hmm. So, and it's an RPG, which is another genre of game that we enjoy. So it just seemed like a really good fit. So going around the room, starting with Anthony, one-liner, like it or not?
I liked it, but I feel the game could have been more.
Okay.
I'm on the middle ground here. I like certain aspects. I didn't like other aspects. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, I too was disappointed. I thought it could have been something. It didn't end up being. So I enjoyed playing it, but I don't really have a lot great to say about it.
I thought it was great. I loved it.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was awesome, and it really brought me back to Shadowrun. I'm the only one who did not finish the game, so maybe that had something to do with it. But also,
I finished it.
I'm not as familiar with... I mean, I'm not as up to date on Shadowrun as you are.
Right.
And so it felt like 1992 all over again, and I really had a lot of fun with it.
I set my my opinions well before I finished the game, so I wouldn't say that finishing the game has anything to do with...
Yeah, I'm just saying a disclaimer for the audience.
Oh, I know. I'm commenting on your statement that finishing the game might have changed your opinion. I don't think that's the case. I think I settled long before I got to the end. Okay, so let's basically talk about what this game is. And it's an isometric RPG. It's got dialogue trees. It's got... tactical strategy, a squad-based strategy. You take cover and you move your guys on a turn-based sequence. They have action points, and they can either move or shoot, use different skills that they have, equip different weapons. It's got this dystopic, futuristic storyline based on the Shadowrun universe, which, if you know anything about that, it's a world where magic has returned to the world and upset the balance of things greatly. So it's still futuristic, it's still sci-fi, it's still got technology and advanced technology. It's based, depending on whether or not you're second or third, fourth, whatever, it's based between 2050 and 2075. And magic has returned. There's shamans and wizards, but then at the same time, there's cyberly augmented people that have, you know, faster than human reflexes and links to their.
It's like fantasy computers. With guns, right? Basically,
well, and guns. Just technology
in technology in general. Future technology in general.
Future technology.
So with there's corporations and druidic druids and animals,
right? Right, and dragons.
Oh, yeah, don't forget Dock Wagon. Oh, yeah, dragons and Dock Wagons.
Dock Wagon is just a corporation that does a service that everyone likes.
Yes.
The one thing I do have to give Shadowrun credit for is I think it correctly kind of predicted that corporations would just grow and grow and have more influence in government today in general. But, yeah, I mean...
Well, I don't think any picture of society quite matches what Shadowrun professes. So, yeah. I mean, that is still a very... what's that word when you have a dark...
Dystopic?
Yeah, it's a word I already used. Yeah. Yeah, it's already that kind of future view.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first thing I want to talk about is the story. The story is presented in such a way that you play scene by scene. You go into a scene, you play out some element of the story, you talk to people, and then you go on to the next scene and maybe you have some combat in there. And then you go on to the next scene, and it tells you more of the story. And the overarching story is one of...
friend.
It's a lot, yeah.
Quote-unquote friend.
Your friend calls you because he's been killed, and you have to investigate that. And
what's the name of this campaign?
The Dead Man's Switch.
Yeah.
Right. So his call actually comes posthumously, and he calls you because he has this technology that... contacts you after his untimely demise.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's I want to get more broad strokes with the story, but basically, you investigate that someone has killed him, and the reason that they've killed him is that they are trying to contact this powerful evil from another dimension and bring it over, and you have to stop that ultimately with a cabal of really powerful people. That's a super fast forward, but that's the story. Anyway, so let's talk about the story and how it progresses.
Okay.
The scene-by-scene thing.
See, that's what took me by surprise. When I play an RPG, I was hoping for a little more open world. You know, I get to go explore things myself deal. But I actually did like the story. And the way it was told scene-by-scene, I had to accept that. And, you know, that I'm playing a different kind of RPG. So I actually liked the story.
Well, I really enjoyed the story as well. And that's, I think, the best thing that I can relate to Paul's impression on. You know, this felt like Shadowrun, and they had all the terminology, they had just the feel, and the environments felt like Shadowrun, and the people felt like Shadowrun, and
that was absolutely did. Like, they touched on all the tropes of Shadowrun really, really well. You know, they had story that had to deal with the Matrix, with, you know, to deal with like drugs, gangs, and then Shadowrunners and the big corporations. They just had everything in there, and it just felt like the world was full of life, except for the fact that you had no real control. But
there was no actual dragon. There was just a hint at a dragon existing.
That's true.
Shadowrun for the SNES had an actual dragon.
Okay, well, I would say that none of my campaigns had an actual dragon. So I think it's pretty normal not to actually see one.
Yeah, I don't know too much about Shadowrun lore, but when I was playing this game, it's like, you know, I associate with, you know, our life, our modern life. You know, there's the NTSB, the...
Yeah, that was. I was like, "Wow, is it still around?"
Yeah. I only know this because of the recent, you know, plane disaster.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I forget Seattle, how that fits in the future United States, right? And timeline wise, right? Just in the Shadowrun universe, like, the United States pretty much broke apart, right?
So my understanding is the United States is still around. It's just it's kind of like the Northeast, except Seattle is still like an island. That is part of it, right?
The Indians,
untouched by,
because
the Native Americans took over
the surrounding
eastern
area.
Coast, but they negotiated with the UCAS, which is
the future United States,
United States, to allow them to keep Seattle. And so Seattle's like this island right in the sovereign Native American state.
Right.
Of Tir Tangir, I think?
No, Tir Tangir is the elven one.
Okay, so one's south.
No, there's like one, actually.
We have the source materials right here.
It's right here, and it is called The Salish Seed Council.
Right, okay. And then Teotihuacan is like Oregon. Oregon, right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Seattle's still part of the United States then.
I think so. Yes, it's part of the United Canadian and American states.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think Chris mentioned like because it's so detached from U.S. is that's
yeah,
why
it's like,
all seedy,
you know,
and everything.
It's like the Hong Kong of the U.K.
Well, no, it's
all detached, but you know, by itself, but it's its own city,
right? And it's also very powerful because it's like the hub of trade for the Native Americans with the UCAS. So if you go, you want to trade from UCS, you send it to Seattle, and then Seattle sends it to wherever. So it's really the biggest city in the UCAS, even though it's physically detached. Anyway, so the thing about the scene by scene that caused a problem was the save system, right? Because you only got to save at the beginning of a scene.
There's no manual save.
Yes.
And there's no manual save system.
That's
so,
not really the story. See, I separate though. That's like just a mechanic of the game. Okay, and I totally agree with you. I'm right there. I hate the save system. And, you know, my life is actually very... I have to get up really quickly to do things. And I have to quit a lot. So I replayed... I must have been like... 8 or 9 missions just because of the save system. And so it was terrible.
Yeah, I guess that there's just really not a good place to slot in the discussion of the save system because we're going to talk combat mechanics, but that's not really a combat mechanic.
Yeah, it's just a game mechanic.
It's just a game mechanic.
No, it's just a terrible one. I guess we should just explain what the save system
and
is.
And the scene by scene, you know, a scene can take you 30 minutes, 40 minutes to get through because there's sometimes a lot of combat, sometimes a lot of conversation. And you only get to save at the end. And basically what happens is when you enter a scene, the game saves. And that's the gist of your saves. If you have to quit at any point during the scene, you lose all progress from that scene.
That's
have
really
to start at
off.
The beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or if you die.
Yeah.
It was a problem for me in the corporate headquarters because not only dealing with the corporate security, you're also jacking to the Matrix.
Right.
And unfortunately for my character, you know, I get one-shotted a lot, which ruins my game, and I replayed a couple missions that way.
So, wow. I actually never died in the game.
Oh, well.
Wow.
Yeah, that's... You played a different type of character. You played one that hung back. Excuse me, right?
I did have guns.
Guns. I had melee, and I was up front all the time. But... you can roll back the game with the saves to the start of a thing, but you lose all your
You can't save in the middle of combat,
right? Yeah. Well, or you can't save after making decisions. Like I've moved equipment around, and
I think
my bank and put stuff in, and then all that stuff is lost. You can't.
You have to do it right before you enter the next scene.
Right.
And then you're like, okay, everything's saved. Quit now.
Yeah. Maybe they were doing that though to prevent abuse though in the combat.
I don't think so. I think it's just a low-budget game, and they're going to fix it. That's my understanding anyway, is that they're changing the save system.
Yeah, it's hard to say what they'll actually do, but that is my impression as well, is that this is a Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. They didn't have money to do everything. They didn't have the time, and that was one thing that they didn't work on, that they accepted this alternative. Because it's a lot easier to save the game at the start, right? You just save variables. Yeah. You go in with renewed hit points and everything, you know, you don't have to remember
that. It's a single-player game, so, I mean, if someone's abusing the game, they're just
hurting themselves, right? Yes. Exactly. And, you know, I found that you can abuse the game because they give you the editor, right? Like, I added that room where you get 300 karma for walking in. I'm like, it's easy.
Wow.
Well, yeah, but not everyone's editing the game. Just like, not everyone's abusing the game.
Well, it's so... one of the things you can't do is replay the story more than once with the same character. I don't know if you guys realize that or not.
That's why you had the 300 karma?
Well, that's why I was editing the game. I mean, I wanted to play around with the editor, and we'll talk more about that, but that's why I was editing the main story, was to
play with your character.
Click that checkbox that says, allow you to import a character.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all it is. You click a checkbox, you rebuild the content pack, and it's a different mission, but... now you can import your character. So anyway, that's how I ended up finding out that, you know, it's really easy to just say this, doing this action awards you with 300 karma and going on. Story, anything else? Any beats or anything that really stood out to you about it?
I have some comment on the missions that are part of the story.
Okay.
But I don't know if that's...
What
do that now?
What,
go. One of the things that I really like about Shadowrun is that there's this feeling that you are doing like a run into a corporate area or whatever, and you have to solve or like break into something, or, you know, it's just that feeling that you get when you're doing a Shadowrun, right? And I think they captured that pretty well by having like the decking and the outside combat going on at the same time.
Right.
And I really like those missions. I thought they were long, but I also thought that, like, this is what we couldn't accomplish with the pen and paper game because it was too difficult to have both of those things going on at the same time. And I think they actually did a pretty good job of having them both go on at the same
time. But it's also, you know, accomplished because it's a single player game.
Right.
You're the one playing both those missions.
Right. No, I agree. It's like, it's easier to do for them, but they did it. And it, you know, it made me feel like, wow, this was really missing from our earlier games.
Yeah. Now, my complaint about that is that if you're an actual decker in the game, or you invested in decking skills like I did, I felt like those points were wasted.
Yeah, I think that I'm with Anthony, too. Actually, I'm with both of you guys, because I really do think you're right. The sequences where decking was important were awesome in that they were parallel. I did have a minor complaint about the mechanics of, like, you take two or three turns
in
the Matrix, and then you come out, and the math didn't quite add up right. Like, when you jack out, I always had one action point, even though it was supposed to take five action points.
I think that was just a bug. What's funny is that I didn't even know you could jack out, because they don't actually tell you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But there is, like, an eject button.
Right.
And I didn't really notice that's what it was for the longest time. So I never jacked out. And then finally I'm like, I'm just going to hit this button. We'll see what happens.
Yeah,
and then you get minus five, and then you end up with one. But anyway, what happens if you actually reach the little alarm thing when you're in the
Matrix? This is the problem. Like, because Chris told me about jacking out, that saved my life. Because when the alarm hits, enemy deckers come in who are way powerful, and they will actually kill you.
Oh,
well, fry you in cool. real life. It is cool. But that's why you have to, there's that little management of the alarm management game too.
Okay.
Casting one ability. This is if you're playing as Dodger, I guess, because you have to have that ability equipped.
All the deckers had that ability.
To reduce the alarm?
Well, at least, okay, so I played.
As a non-decker, I always had that ability.
Yes, exactly.
As a non-deck, that's you inside the Matrix,
no,
right?
Never no, me. You're always somebody someone else.
See, no, me. My character does not have that ability.
Well, you played your decker wrong. I'm just
kidding. Might have, yeah, yeah. See?
But you obviously weren't good
that's
enough.
That's because you didn't know about how the Matrix worked, right?
Exactly. And at the time, you know, I was also, you know, the only time my character was actually decking was with the, I forgot his name, the cleaner dude. The janitor from the...
his name is Johnny something.
Johnny Clean?
Yeah Johnny like Clean, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, that's the only time, like, I believe you guys... only control Johnny Clean.
Right.
Yeah, so I was controlling Johnny Clean and myself. And that's where I learned about, you know, his consumables. Like, oh, that's kind of cool, and abilities. But I was in the Matrix myself, and it was kind of easy because there's both of us going through. And
sure.
And I think we did trip the alarm, and we wound up killing the enemy deckers.
Well, so I tripped the alarm once, and this is how I ended up failing that mission ultimately, but I fought them off, and they spawn. And every time you change rooms, they change rooms with you automatically. They don't have to follow you.
It is so their network.
They're just, they're just automatically in the other room attacking you. So what I did was I exited the Matrix completely, and then I went back in, and they were in the starting room.
Yes.
And I attacked them twice, and then I exited the Matrix.
Oh.
And so I kept going back in, getting my first attacks, and then failing. That's how I ended up defeating them. But then ultimately my guy got shot in the real world, so I lost that whole mission. But because you had to, if you exit, right, you got to go back in and walk through this linear Matrix path and take tons of turns to get to the end.
Yep.
None of this actual, like, the way Matrix travel would work was just instantaneous, but whatever.
No, you're represented as a figure. That's the whole... That's
this Matrix. You're confusing... Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how the Matrix works.
but you're not a little electron traveling through there.
There is no speed. There is no instantaneous...
Yeah.
Like, it's not like that.
Well, it's basically the Matrix, because this hasn't been described, and the Matrix works exactly the same way as the
real world?
The overworld. You have a guy in there who has action points, and he moves, and he takes cover, and he has a chance to shoot and crit, and you have spells that you use.
In layman terms, it's just another combat map.
No, no, the healing is much better in The Matrix.
The healing is much better in The Matrix.
Actually, oh, I wouldn't say that. I actually like the healing on the outside of the game, but we can get to that.
Yeah, okay. It's just a different set of spells in The Matrix. Different.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, so I totally agree with Paul that the feeling was good. But also with Anthony, that the deckers were underplayed. And there's parts where you're like, you need a decking skill, but really it's just a dumb skill check. It's like, do you have five? Okay, you get to open this door.
There were parts that only had one decking skill. And I just like, okay, I'm going to buy a decking skill just so I can pass this check.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's early on in the game, right?
Later in the game, too.
Decking. I bought my fourth point.
One decking, okay. Sure.
I don't remember there being a one decking later on in the game, but I do remember when you're investigating her room, then you can use some of the...
Yeah, actually, you told me about that, too. I was like, I keep all the spare karma around, I stopped investing in decking, but I just got that fourth point or fifth point, too.
Well, 4 points only costs 10 points.
To get it there. But me, karma. I was at three, so it was only 4 points or maybe five.
Two, three, four, nine karma.
Yeah. I'll play devil's advocate here, though. And what did you want out of the decking? Like, did you want every mission to have decking in it?
No. I want my characters, if I'm a decker, character's a decker. I want him to feel important. But these guys are, there's few opportunities for my decker. I'm not really a decker, but I invested points in decking. But I felt like,
So you're not a decker, but you invested points in decking.
Yeah, well, he was a decker. He started out as a decker.
No, I started out as a rigger.
Oh.
Rigger.
I started out as a rigger, but I invested in decking and carried that keyboard around with me. It's a piece of equipment.
I don't know who started out as a decker, right?
Yeah, and I think it was Ricky. I never used it. I mean, sorry, I used it. No, yeah, the only time I needed to use it was when I was going with Johnny Clean, when you're at your headquarters.
Decking is really cool, but I kind of understand what you're saying, and I really want to answer your question, experience of the RPG when I started picking my character. And I knew from the experience of the RPG that the decker always sits around and just waits for the decking. And then outside of that, he has crap skills. So I'm like, I don't want to play a decker. That's going to be kind of cool, but I just can't go there. And I ended up choosing somebody else. And
I chose the exact same. I went the exact same reason. I had the exact same reason for not playing a decker as you. Not that I really wanted to play a decker, but I knew deckers were going to be a problem.
Yeah, they're the guy you have to bring along on the mission to do one thing.
Yep.
And the safe otherwise crackers. Otherwise, liabilities, which is nice because they gave him an extra ability where you could actually mark people and give them plus to hit, which I found actually pretty useful.
But this is my response to your thing of what I really expected out of deckers. And it's not really about decking. The problem that I have with deckers is not really about decking. It's about party composition, right? You need a decker once in a while. And so you need a guy with that skill. But the way the hiring system works in the game doesn't really lend you to having a party where you've got the decker and the fighters and the mages and the things. You don't really have all your bases covered. You have to pick and choose which paths you're going to go down and risk not having the skills you want when you get to the point where you need them.
That's a good question. We should talk about party composition at some point. One of the funny things that I did is that I didn't know. I thought maybe I need a decker in order to break some lock or do something funny on certain missions, even though when they wouldn't tell you that you would need a decker. So I ended up hiring a decker
for
all of this stuff.
And I ran out of money because
that's just good practice. It's true that they didn't present you with the sudden decking that you needed to
do. Exactly. That's actually why I invested in decking on my rigger. I carry that thing around just in case they offer you that opportunity.
Okay, but I'd like to make this comment. I got to the end. The first time I ever got to use my emergency hired decker was on that safe crossing the bridge right before the last room. Did you see that safe?
No.
Okay, because that was right after where you're at.
Yeah.
So there's a safe where you need a decking skill of 4 or 5 to open the safe. No idea what it's in it. I walk up to it. It's grayed out. I got my decker there.
His skill is?
His skill is 5.
And it just didn't work? You have to have your own?
Yes.
Skill? No. The decker has to do it.
Oh, the decker.
You can't control your AI guys when you're not in combat.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's a bug. That's what that is.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So, that's too bad.
And going into the editor, I realized that the way the logic works is if the activating character has this skill, then you can show it in the dialogue.
Yeah.
But the activating character is me, not the decker. So it is a bug, but it's not going to be fixed. It's not a bug that they're going to rectify. It's a bug that they just,
Who cares? One of the beauties of this game, though, is that someone could fix it. Like, someone could just take the campaign and fix all those crappy bugs and then re-release it, right? I mean, isn't that...
They could. Release the module, but Dead Man's Switch is the...
Is the game.
Game.
Well, no one's going to re-release I mean, people have re-released the core one with the import character trigger on.
Right.
But I can't see... it may be. Sometimes people release user patches, unofficial patches to games, and I could see them going through the story and fixing it.
I mean, you just kind of have to account for the fact that they didn't just build a great game. Well, in my opinion, it's a great game. But they also made all these tools and stuff.
Yeah, see, that's
and
what
so they
I
went
feel.
Above and beyond.
I feel like, you know, this Shadowrun Returns is a tool, an editor, right. And it comes packaged with this, I want to say fan mod, right? But it is it felt like a module. It doesn't feel like a game. It feels like a module that's supposed to demonstrate all these different things about Shadowrun,
yeah.
Which is what makes the game "quote unquote" great. But to me, it doesn't feel like a polished game.
It's a $20 Kickstarter game. I think when you grade it, you have to keep that in mind,
right?
I mean, personally, it's not a AAA game. It's not done by a great.
Yeah, just saying, it just feels like what you're paying for is this tool. And here's a sample mod we made
Let's talk about the editor and the future and where it's going. This is character progression that I wanted to talk about. But basically, I think that they made a mistake with their starting mod in giving the characters way too much karma. Because you basically can't take the character out of this game into anywhere else. By the end of the game, you're superhuman.
Yeah, you're superhuman.
You get way too much karma too fast. And it really plays more like a traditional RPG, you know? Like, you're this level 1 guy, and by the end of it, you're level 20, which is the level cap.
Yeah, and you took down an alien invasion.
You stopped a god from terrorizing the Earth, and you're a superhuman thing. And the whole game plays out like that. There's this progression that's not very RPG and not very friendly to expandability, right? You're not going to play this character ever again. The Dead Man's Switch is like its own isolated game that doesn't go anywhere outside of itself.
It's its own game. That's true.
Yeah.
I did not... So initially, I felt the same way. I'm like, wow, I'm getting karma so fast. All my skills are going up so incredibly fast. Like, there has to be something wrong with this. And then towards the end of the game, I felt like, you know what? No, I think they did fine. You know, he basically became really good at combat, but he can't do anything else. And I think that felt appropriate, towards the end of the game. You know, if I was just I'd just gotten a little bit of karma, and now I went from, I barely got, the full auto ability at the end of the game, I would have felt gypped. And so
it would have felt powerful. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, though. This mod, this game, is, just a demonstration of everything.
Yeah.
Letting you try everything.
Yeah, I'm coming from the pen and paper world, and I expect the progress to be a little bit slower and to do more adventures. Right? This is just one adventure, and the whole character is completely consumed by it. Mm-hmm. And I was expecting more of a, you play one adventure, you gain a little bit of karma, you play another one. Maybe you replay the same one, grind out,
So in the pen and paper game, each one of those scenes would have taken a much longer time.
Right.
And so,
And would have given you one or two karma.
It's true. They would have given you less karma, but you also would have just gotten less overall because you can't finish all the scenes. Just because it's not a single-player experience and it's on a computer, you can just play a lot more through.
Right.
So you would have gotten more karma than you would have normally in a pen and paper anyway. I mean,
I think that at the end of the game, I wouldn't have had... my first playthrough, I had 13 body, which is not really possible in the pen and paper to begin with, but... ignoring that, that's the karma
you
use
must have been
there.
A troll or something.
I was a troll.
Yeah, okay.
yeah, I was gonna say.
The karma use there is just extreme, and that wasn't my only skill being leveled. That was just the biggest one. You spend 250 karma before the end of the game.
Sure.
And that is an extremely large amount of karma to get in 10 hours of play. In 10 hours of play, you would get 10 karma in the pen and paper game.
Right, but it's just a different scale, so I don't think you can really compare those. I also didn't go into the game with an expectation that I was going to take this character and actually go play a different adventure, so I never felt like the way that you did.
Well, see,
my character's just ruined for anything
else. As a Kickstarter backer, I was fully aware that the editor was
No, I knew about that.
Primary I just, thing, and that they were. Right. I was expecting to play many missions by users and to repeat that and move my character around.
But isn't that like not a great expectation though? Because so here, answer me this about the editor: does it scale like the challenge based on what level you are?
Nope.
Because if it doesn't do that, then I expect it to, you know, either start you over or, you know, have some kind of level cap or something.
Yeah. Well, what I was thinking here is like, you know, this. I mean, someone's got to create it now because we already know what the game is, Dead Man's Switch. But someone sounds like should create a lengthier campaign with the, you know, the slow rewards, but everything's scale. You know,
right?
It's going to be a longer, much longer game. That's sounds like what Chris wants. Like multiple modules. Like once you finish this smaller Dead Man's Switch and get your 20 karma, you import your character to part two of this lengthier campaign.
Well, they can gate missions with karma requirements. Like you need to have spent 60 karma to enter this mission, which kind of gives you a level minimum.
Minimum, but not a maximum.
But not a maximum.
Because at the same time, you don't want someone overpowered just plowing through your scenarios.
Why not? You know, I mean, that's fair. I don't see a reason why you can't experience some story as a superhuman, you know, going through and like, oh, this was really easy, but, you know.
Well, then,
it would have made sense, up to too, the from Chris's point of view, too, that, you know, maybe if they released... They could, you know, retail and resell those modules, those expansions. And if they released less karma on them, I mean, they could just, you know, say, here's a new module that you can get from us and continue your adventures with their guy.
I'm not certain I'm saying that they made the wrong decision. I don't think that they made the wrong decision. They packaged this as a complete game. You get to experience the full breadth of all your skills. I mean, it makes sense kind in of. A lot of ways.
I mean, I'm at the end. I have like level 6, you know, quickness, gunning, and my, you know, or like I guess firearms, and level 6 of the rifle ability and the shotgun ability, and that's like, and then I have a like 10 in body, and those are the skills that I spent the entire game building up, and I don't feel like that now. I'm like, I'm pretty good at combat, but I'm not overpowered, and I certainly could go way higher in quickness. And I didn't get there.
Yeah, because it's because you invested a lot of points into body too. It sounds like.
Yeah.
Because that gets expensive. Me, I only went in. Well, guns weren't my forte. I went intelligence. My drones were my powerhouses.
Right, but I mean, you basically got to improve really well in one area. Yes. That was my like my feeling.
Yeah, and you split up your expertise amongst rifles,
right?
Shotguns.
You specialize. Yeah.
So that's what you know.
Well, another thing they did to make the progression video gamey was they created these tiers of equipment. Right,
so like,
and this is my least favorite aspect of the progression.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
It's that you can get a lot of money, but there's nothing available to buy, and it's not like typical Shadowrun where it's actually availability. You know, there's like you have to work to find the rare things you want,
and the weapons do different things in Shadowrun.
Right,
and what you're saying is, but Tears is like, nope, I just get the next upgrade when it's available.
Yeah, it's like I held off buying any cyberware until the last tier became available because I wanted to see what would be available in terms of stats.
Plus, you wanted to save your essence too, right? I mean,
you know, this thing like we weren't sure how like Chris and I we weren't sure how essence worked. Like, I did not want to buy this, you know, this cyberware now because it's going to cost 2 essence. But then I see this one for sale that only the same thing, much improved, but it costs 1 essence instead. Right. Like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen to my... I already spent 2 essence. Am I really going to get that back? That doesn't sound right.
I don't think
you
do. In the pen and paper game, you
don't get it back in the pen and paper.
Yeah, but in the video game, you do.
Right.
Yeah.
You can swap stuff out in the video game.
So the way it works in the video game is you have different slots. A head slot, a body slot, 2 arm slots, and 2 leg slots. And if you put something in that slot is permanently stuck with something in it. You can never take it out.
Yes, cyber.
But you can replace it, override it with something else. And that something else could be lower costed. So it could decrease your overall cost. So if you put something that's worth 2 essence into your arm, it will lower your essence to 4. But then you replace it with something with 1 essence, and that will raise your essence to 5. But you can never get rid of that arm slot. You can never...
Yeah, you never find that decaying arm of yours. They didn't refrigerate it for you.
But the thing about the progression is that, you know, I had all this money and I wanted to buy the better cyberware right up front. And I could have, and they just had it in the store, but
I would have liked to have bought
some specific point in the story.
Yeah. I would have liked to have bought cyberware at the beginning.
I did.
K character
creation. Oh, no, not in character creation. But I did buy Cyberware.
I mean, that's one of the things I liked about the pen and paper game was you could just do that,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I could see story-wise why they wouldn't have that, yeah. But it's just,
it's
I don't
a video
know.
Game.
Well, yeah. You can't get alpha and beta and
I believe you can't get Delta a data track.
In the
we can't character get a data
creation.
Jack?
No, in character creation.
In character creation, data. Second edition, you could.
Yeah, not AlphaWare.
Not AlphaWare? I thought you could.
Well, I don't remember set character.
I don't think they had AlphaWare no in as, yeah. Second edition. I think they had like levels and stuff. I think but
did. No, I yeah. think they had like Wire Reflexes 3, but yeah. They didn't have something that said Wire Reflexes AlphaWare.
No, and Wire Reflexes 3 AlphaWare.
I understand like the concept oh. of AlphaWare.
It might have been
I don't think
a
they
source
had
book.
That.
Might have been a source book, it but I don't know.
Probably was.
Because there's references to it. And I've read references to it, and it seems like that it existed in as far back as 1.
Well, it might have been, but the game that I played, the second edition yeah. one, I don't remember it.
Yeah, we always just start out with, you know,
yeah.
just start out with it.
Character creation in this game was just skill point allocation, or sorry, karma.
Well, and
yeah, I didn't like how you couldn't gear up. Like, if you were an experienced Shadowrunner and stuff going starting off, right, you didn't have any, you know, gear that you've acquired in the past. It's just...
No, that makes... I understand what you're saying. Like, one of the story elements is that you're, like, supposed to be the dirt poor guy at the beginning. You don't have actually any resources. But I agree. Shadowrun, the RPG, makes you feel like, from the very beginning, you can actually do things and you have good equipment. Mm-hmm. And this game didn't do that.
Yeah.
However, I didn't, you know... So what are you guys looking for as far as the equipment system? It's just more variety so that you could like have, you know, some trade-offs.
I want my assault cannon, damn it.
I want variety because I look at the weapons, right? Like I look at the rifles. They're just upgrades. I mean, there's always two choices. There's a more expensive rifle that gives you higher ammo capacity or one more damage. Those are only choices. And the next tier is like, you know, you have two new weapons. One is cheaper that... They're both better than your other set of rifles, but it's just a slowly upgrade. But I see yeah. like what Chris is saying is like a video game. Like, you know, they're scaling the difficulty and they're
what I wanted
equipment to match it.
In general, was more open-endedness, more RPG-ishness.
Yeah.
Where all your guns are laid on the table and you get to pick the one you want. And some of them are better and some are worse. But that's not necessarily
you want
like
to
in
create your character.
I felt like well, yeah. all just, knives were like there's a knife and then there's a katana, and a katana is just hands down better than the knife. There's no reason to pick knife once katana becomes available.
But you
and
just
you pick
said
the knife because the katana is not available yet.
Right.
That's why you stick with a knife.
That's why you stick with that.
Yeah. That's why you wear the ninja suit halfway. Right. Halfway
okay. So you yeah. just said that you wanted all the weapons laid on the table and some will be better than the others. Didn't you just say that?
Yeah. Or? But the thing is, I mean, it sounds like what we all want is sounds like the RPG aspect is the character creation, right? Like I have this much funds. I could buy the knife. That way I could get my wired reflexes. Mm-hmm. Or I buy the katana and I don't get my wired reflexes. You know, I want right. that kind of trade-off.
Yeah. There's not much
there
variety.
Is, okay. Just, so how much money did you guys have? Because I played on hard the whole time. And I mean, I had a little bit of money, and I couldn't always buy everything that I wanted. Because
you
the
always
time.
Gave away your money,
really?
Right, Paul? Yeah. You always give away your money.
What do you mean, gave it away?
And like in the option choices, on
oh,
the dialogues.
Okay. So you have no money because you hired Shadowrunners.
Yes,
that's mm-hmm. the reason.
You I guys mean, didn't hire Shadowrunners.
No, I had
in
a
the first playthrough. I did what you did, and I was dirt poor the whole time.
Yeah.
And the second game, I only hired one guy, the guy that improved me by casting haste on me.
Yep. Yeah.
And haste. I went through and killed yeah. everything by myself.
See, yeah. See, I had a lot of money because for one and only playthrough. I was talking to Chris about this. Like, no, I didn't have money issues. I only hired one other person just to come with me, but I had my drones.
Right.
They're so like Shadowrunners.
It seems like you guys are. Well, I mean, you're playing the game for sure, but you're already making the trade-off. I mean, you've decided that I'm just going to buy all the equipment, and now you're complaining about the equipment
no,
because...
No. See, you don't have all the guns on the table.
Well, I understand. Yeah. So that's the complaint, is the release schedule of the guns.
And variety, I guess.
But I think the release schedule, that's a trope in almost all RPGs, that you know you just don't get the best equipment available to you at the beginning, and
well,
slowly it releases over time.
The release schedule is only because there's no creativity in the guns. There's just guns that get better. That's why the release schedule exists, right? If there was a gun like this one, or if this, like I had knives, right? If this knife did 2 AP damage, but you know, 3 less damage, and this one did, you know, 5 more damage, but it had 5% less chance to hit. I mean, those would be some.
There's no rock, paper, scissors like to it.
There's there a gun that does one, or a knife that does one, a knife that does two, a knife that does three, and that's how progression works.
Yeah, there was. So, I mean, that's true, and I can see where you're coming from. I picked two weapon options, and so I was always trading off. I'm like, do I want the shotgun now, or do I want the rifle now? And so I was always making those kinds of calculations in my head, like what I was going to use when I was actually in combat and what I was going to buy next. So I didn't have the same feeling that you have, where I thought everything was just linear because I didn't specialize in one gun.
Well, and I had cyberware, right? I wanted to buy alphaware, but it just wasn't available yet, so I just had to wait until it came available. And I was like, I'm going to buy something for my arms. I want some strength, but I have to wait till it's released in the game, even though there, well, I have the money. I mean, it costs more, right? That's a trade-off.
Right, so they don't even tell you about alphaware. That's like an external game concept that you just kind of have to know about.
Right.
And so because of my experience with second edition, I didn't know about alphaware. So, and I asked you this question, I'm like, is there ever any better upgrades for cyberware? Because I had already bought cyberware. I didn't go in thinking, no, I got to save my money to wait for the very best stuff. Yeah. I'm like, no, I want to play.
But didn't you know about Essence? Or like, weren't you worried about Essence? Like, wouldn't you want the best cyberware to begin with?
No,
because you don't know what's. You see, when you play the game once, like, Chris knows what's coming up ahead.
Right.
Like me, I didn't spend any money on cyberware until the very end. And, Chris had to tell me, like, that's a final shop. I was like, oh, well, it's time for me to blow my money. So this is basically all the stuff I'm going to see for the rest of the game.
One, there's the essence cost, right? Cyberware is very limited. You only get 5 essence. You have to make the right choices. So if you make a mistake and you put something in your legs and you're like, oh, I really wanted arms, you're screwed. You can never get that essence back. So you don't want to do that until you've gotten all your options on the table. Mm-hmm. Two, there's a resocketing cost. If you pay $5,000 for Wired Reflexes 2 and then Wired Reflexes 3 comes out and it's $10,000, it costs you $15,000 to put something in your chest when you should have just paid $10,000 in the first place and not had to deal with that extra cost.
Mm-hmm.
And that is another reason why you're broke, is because you replaced your cyberware.
No, well, okay, so I only replaced my cyberware for the very last mission because that's the only time that I ever saw it really available to me. But anyways, you know, I just thought this is Shadowrun. You know, cyberware in Shadowrun is usually pretty good. Like, at least in the second edition, it was great, right?
Second edition was awesome. So I was like, nerfed it a lot.
I'm just going to buy cyberware because I think that's awesome and I wanted to play with it.
Right. Yeah, I wanted to play with it too, but I didn't need it.
Min-maxing my money.
The game was so easy.
So yeah,
I felt like cyberware wasn't as good as the pen and paper game.
Not in second edition, I agree. It wasn't.
It was. I felt like the cyberware was really lame, and that spells were better. I mean, in second edition Shadowrun, I felt that technology kind of had the upper hand over magic.
Yeah,
and in this game, I felt magic had the upper hand over technology.
It's also a different kind of combat system in Shadowrun Returns. It's you go, I go.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different, I don't know, I think it's a different game, so that you don't feel as powerful because the cyberware is only adding to your skill points.
Yeah, the wired reflexes was super disappointing with its added movement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I didn't buy it. Well, it did give you a dodge.
If it gave you AP, I'd be like, yes, okay, this is awesome. But it didn't. I totally expected it to give you AP.
Yeah.
I did too.
I expected it to give you like 3 AP or something.
But that's why, I mean, I have a question. You know, is wired reflexes in the later editions as badass as it was in the second edition? I mean, maybe it's been.
I don't know the answer to that because I'm not really.
You just like to collect the source material.
In my opinion, I think it was broken in second edition.
Well,
I
mean, okay,
I could totally have seen it been scaled down.
I mean, this is off topic, but in second edition, it was you rolled all these dice, and whatever your score was, every time you could subtract 10, you got to go again. So if you rolled a 37, then you get 27, and then you get 17, and you get to go
four times.
Right. In third edition, you just roll a bunch of dice and that gives you a number, 47. And then if you have wired reflexes 1, you go twice. So you go at 47, everyone else goes, and then you go again. And if wired reflexes 2, 47, everyone else goes, and then you go a third time. So it's like you get one action per turn, but then if you have wired reflexes or the edit powers, you get to go again after everybody's gone.
Okay, as long as there's other ways to get that extra action other than cyberware.
There are.
So in second edition, you basically got to go before everyone else.
Right, and that was the thing. It's like you min-max with adept skills and cyberware, and you can be going 5 times before anyone
else
gets to go.
Right, and you instantly kill someone before they give a chance.
It is called wired reflexes.
Right, you know? I know. That's the thing. I was like,
and it made
that's
sense
what really made me upset about the cyberware.
No, I totally agree with Scott. It was like magic. Like, didn't it cost you hit points, or, you know, like, didn't it damage you when you actually casted spells?
In the old pen and paper one, yeah, it did. Right. It was crazy. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I really
Still exists.
It doesn't hurt you.
If you want to cast faster than your cooldowns, you take physical damage.
Right. But that's the thing. It's like, if you just stay within your cooldowns, then you don't take any damage. Whereas that wasn't the case in the pen and paper. You just took damage.
No,
like,
you only took damage if you couldn't make the resist, right, which is based on the force level that you cast the spell at.
Right.
And you could manage that by just casting the spell you could manage.
You could, and you need a little bit of luck. But
and
yes,
a little bit of luck.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought was missing out of the combat system, not since we're talking about this, is the fact that when you're wounded in the original game, it actually made you fight worse.
Right.
Yeah. And that did not seem to exist in this game at all. So you could you know, be on your last hit point, and you'd be like, okay, I get
fighting at 100%.
Still got 4 AP. I'm going to kill all you. So I thought that was a little odd.
Oh, yeah, that
anything
was...
Anything above zero,
one, two.
I'm 100%.
Yeah. It's a... typical RPG kind of stuff.
I'm sure it would have been hard to code that, though.
No, I mean, all you need to do, they already have the concept of a wound in the game, right?
Right.
And so you just, you know, you just figure out how many wounds you have, and you just give them some malices, or take away AP or something.
Okay, take away AP, maybe, yeah.
You know, all this gets back to the statement you made, is Kickstarter, you know, they had limited resources.
Yeah.
This is just another system that didn't get implemented.
Sure. And I didn't fault it for that.
But let's see. We talked about healing a little bit. Since we're going to game combat mechanics. So the game is this tactical. The combat is tactical combat, and you take turns. You have action points, and you can use that action point either to move or attack.
That's what we call it, refer to as AP.
Right, so, yeah, AP. Mm-hmm. And then you have a number of weapons based on how skillful you are. You have weapon slots, and they can be ranged or melee. And then you have special skills, which could be magic or could just be a skill based on your class. Like the Decker has the ability to target people and make them easier for everyone else to hit. Or the Wizards have fire bolts and stuff like that.
GPS, man, you could just zero in on those guys.
Right. But the higher Deckers suck. They always miss at their targeting.
Oh, no, I didn't feel that way at all.
All the time.
No, my guys almost always hit.
They almost never hit. But I
you must have kept your guys way far back. Did you keep your guys?
Yeah, they were way far back. Yeah. The Deckers, they can't fight.
No, did you hire the crappy Decker? Or
I hired some elf.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Who did I? No, I had an elf, too.
Speaking of which, Nephilim? So when you hire people before you go into a game, there's a list of Deckers or of Shadowrunners who are cheap. Oh, and then there's a list of ones who all have like weird descriptions. They're like, this is a burnt out mage instead of a standard classes like Rigger, Decker, Samurai. It's like burnt out mage or corporate wage slave or something like that in this thing called the Nephilim Network. So did you guys use the Nephilim Network?
I looked through the Nephilim Network. I never hired.
I never hired.
They all seem more expensive.
No.
They go both ways.
They are both ways. Yeah. Like, so there are some really good guys in the Nephilim Network. One of them was like this dwarf support mage, and he was only $1,000 per mission, and all he would do is just buff you. He had like 4 different buffs, and he would just buff everyone in your party. It was great.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I didn't really look at them. So the Nephilim Network is like 15 people. They're all Kickstarter backers who paid to have their own character designed into the game.
Oh, okay.
And so that's all those guys are
I was like, yeah,
they're
dwarf. So, you know, it was great. Yeah.
Anyway, I just wondered if anyone used it because I never did. But I think that was because I didn't want to take the time to look through everybody and figure out what they were and how they worked. I was just like, okay, I'm going to go look at mages. So I want everyone listed as a mage.
Yeah.
There's a lot of reading that
game. So I actually, I really enjoyed hiring the different guys because you'd kind of learn what skills they have, and then you would take them on future missions based on, like, you know, what you thought about them. There were some guys I'd never took again because I hated them, and there were other times that I really liked them.
That's what gave me experience because, you know, in the game, I'm a rigger. They gave you Deckers. They gave you a shaman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Coyote, she's, I don't know what she is, a gunner, a shotgunner. She's a shotgun for me. So I never experienced melee. So I hired a street samurai who wasn't equipped with any ranged weapons because you have the options for guns. I just wanted melee, so I assumed that she would be good with swords.
Right.
And no, she was horrible. She.
Yeah, I hired a street samurai too, and I was always afraid to actually have her charge. No, just because of the XCOM mentality,
right?
Or something.
Right.
It's like low
hit percentages. I'm like, I've never seen these.
Now you have to have your supporting guys to raise their percentages. At least I did.
Well, that's basically how I played. I had a mage who cast armor and
haste.
Hit percentage.
Or hit percentage.
I didn't aim have mage. Wow. I wish I had it.
Yeah. So did you have a shaman
for the haste? I don't remember what he was.
You don't need a shaman for haste.
Right.
The support mage has the haste and the aim accuracy, and it has the plus armor. I mean, it was just great.
That's why I basically took charisma on my own so I could cast haste on myself.
Yep.
Instead of do the wired reflexes route.
So then I would use AP damaging items to run up and hit people, cause them not to be able to take actions, and then I just stun lock a bunch of guys and kill them one by one with my melee guy.
Yeah, maybe I was playing on normal. That I felt like I just rely on my drones for everything.
But it's hard to say. Maybe you got a street samurai who just wasn't good at swords, because it's not clear what the stats are that you need in order to get something to occur.
See, this is a higher. I just assumed that because she only has a sword,
right?
She'd be good with swords. I'm looking at her abilities. She could do AP damage, do crit, but trade for hit percentages, right? But I just want to kill this guy, finish this guy off. Just your basic attack, because it has the best hit percentage, right? No, I mean, it's 60-some percent chance. Like, I don't see this numbers with my gun guys.
Well, we played a little bit around with the editor and different levels, and it appears that level factors significantly into to hit chances.
What do you mean by levels? Like the level,
How much karma the guys have, or something? How difficult the enemies are?
The skill points spent, right?
Right. Yeah. Because when I had done this test because I wanted to know. I put 2 points into close combat. Or whatever the skill is that raises to hit chance. And I got 10% increased chance to hit. Mm-hmm. But then I did that on level 1, and I got like 30% chance to hit. So basically, depending on the difficulty of the guys.
Yeah, the counter level of the enemy. Right. 'Cause
well, isn't it just their stat of like their quickness or dodge or something?
I mean, it could be the enemy stats that come into factor, but I mean, these low level... What are they called?
Less
grunts
karma.
Are probably, they have very low stats.
Right. Yeah.
And your stats are probably...
Anyway, so the people you hire probably just are bad. They're probably not good enough to be on your run.
She gave me a very, very bad experience for melee. I was like, oh, good thing. I mean, I feel like, maybe because you're doing well with melee, I feel like, melee is just for if you can design your own character around melee. These hires, I can't rely on them. Until I met Harlequin. He gave me a much better experience.
Well, yeah. I feel like everybody I hired was like that. Like, they couldn't shoot to save their lives, that they couldn't target people with the skills. The only people that I hired that did any good were the people who supported me.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
They cast skills on me and then 100% chance.
Sorry, Coyote was a regular for me. I like
she was cheap.
Reliable.
She's and she
cheap.
Could shoot.
Yes.
Well, and Jake Armitage, right? He was good.
You can hire him?
No, he comes with you sometimes.
Sometimes? Just once.
Twice.
Twice.
He fights with you at the beginning and then also
at the graveyard.
Okay. That's it, right?
Yeah, and then the shaman, was...
I hired her all the time whenever I could.
No, well, you get the free one at the airport, and then you hire her for free when going to the...
Whenever I could hire a free one or Coyote, I hired them. So the cheap people I always kept on staff, but...
Yeah, and then I used my drones, and I always felt like that's all I needed. And I hired, when you're invading the corporate headquarters, to steal Aegis.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I took the Dodger, because that's who Johnny Clean recommended.
Yep.
So I took him along there, but that's when I was having trouble because I was being overwhelmed.
Well, now you have two Deckers.
So,
no.
I have a question.
You only have one Jack to port in, to deck into that thing. You only could use one Decker on that mission.
I know, but that was a bad thing. I said, now you have two Deckers, as in like, that's like your party's weighted towards Deckers, which means you're going to have problems in the actual fighting.
No, see, I'm not a good Decker. Well, I'm not a Decker.
He's
a rigger.
And all the riggers are like multipliers, because they're like each drone is another Shadowrunner, another...
Yep. Right.
I have a question about your rigging drones, though. Your drones, was there any variety in them, or is it just...
That's okay. That's one thing I like to complain about, is that these drones, there's 8 or 10 different drones.
Right.
And, there's two classes, support and attack. And just, it's progression, right? As they get, as the game goes on, these next class of drones come about. At the start of the game, I was able to control A-class drones. It starts with like C, B, A, and S.
Uh-huh.
But you know, the only ones I could buy were C-class drones. Well, you get one for free. And that's the one I used until I could buy a B-class drone. It was a flying one. But anyways,
So the drones
only give you a description like, ooh, this guy can drop smoke grenades.
Yeah, like they don't have like useful things like
they are
one very, has like a flamethrower and one no, has see, like a rifle.
You can't view the stats of these drones before purchase or before actually using them. So for the very last mission, I just bought a S-class support drone. I've been using this S-class attack drone, and this drone does a lot of damage, can disarm folks, which I love doing. Because once an enemy drops their weapon, they don't pick it back up.
You can't pick it up.
I know. They just run around and try to punch you. So they have the disarm skill. They have the high crit chance headshot skill, which, you know, like, you know.
Maybe when they disarm them, they actually chop off their arm or something.
No, they're just trying to still punch you.
So, with just a stub.
Yeah. Chop off their hands.
Their fingers.
So then this. Chris warned me, like, yeah, you need a lot of med kits for this last mission. It's like, okay, I'll try out this support drone, the Wolfhound. You know, it says it can drop grenades, and it can fight on its own, and it can drop med kits. So, okay, I hired it, and I brought it to the mission. It's like, oh, my gosh. It's while these other attack drones have, like, 200 ammo, they never have to reload. Every time you attack, you know, the ammo depletion, you know, goes down like a pixel. This thing only gets three shots. It fires a grenade, but I don't know if it's just an animation of a grenade or if it does AOE. Not sure. And when it says drops med kits, it just has inventory. It has two med kits in its inventory and a frag grenade and, I don't know, it's walking inventory thing with
a grenade launcher. So a support thing should have had a larger inventory than two. Is that what you're saying?
No, it had five inventory and had different things in it. But I wanted an attack drone. I wanted to take my attack drone.
Right.
Or I expected it to be
offensive.
So
what you're saying is you experimented with a drone right at the very end in the last mission?
Yeah, I did.
Well, I think what I would have expected from that description was it has a heal skill.
Right?
Exactly, yes.
Like it runs over and it casts heal on people.
Yes.
And it has med kits in its inventory. So it's kind of like a overworked system.
Yeah,
which
it drops a lot med kits is what it says. So I thought, it'll just, med kit dispenser.
Right.
So then I'm guessing the first support drone that drops smoke grenades probably just has smoke grenades in its inventory.
That's pretty lame, actually.
Yeah, and it probably doesn't even attack. I don't know. I haven't equipped it or bought it or equipped it because this one, they say, and it attacks as well, which means it has a grenade launcher.
And
it lacks attack skills. I don't remember what attack skills it has, but it doesn't have three like my other drone.
Yeah. You think they would have like different classes though of drones, like this is a good close combat
kind of a drone.
This is a good long range kind of a drone.
Yeah, they don't explain it that well. They see these little descriptions. I want to know the stats. I want to know the actual damage on the guns, the range. If it's range, it's stats. I want to know its stats, and then it matters if it flies or not. Because if it flies, it doesn't seem to eat up movement points going in into and out of a vent.
Well, it's funny the way the descriptions on items. Just seems like they didn't really test that or look at it too much. Like when you have a weapon that you can't use yet, it uses some of the descriptive text that says what it does to tell you that you need a skill for it, which causes the rest of the text to run off of the area and be clipped. So you can't read what it is until you've invested the points that you could use it.
Yeah. I ran into that too.
Yeah.
I noticed that.
But anyway, there's a lot of things that are unexplained in items like
Smart Link.
Right?
Yeah.
What does it do? Who knows?
Yeah. It's better, so I bought it.
Well, if you're a pen and paper fan, it lets you automatically reload and change fire modes and helps you aim.
I bought it, and all it does it has a new skill ability. I don't remember what it was. I just saw like, yay, I have a new skill. I don't know what it does.
But like one time I wanted to buy a gun, and I didn't have the skill points for it. And this is another part of the whole this is very gamey linear thing that I didn't like. So I didn't have the skill points to use the weapon. But I knew I was needed one more karma, and then I would buy the gun skill. So I was like, I'll just buy the gun and take it with me, and when I get the karma, I'll upgrade. Mm-hmm. And it said, you can't buy this gun because you don't have the skill to use it. So I couldn't even buy it.
Oh.
Because I didn't have the skill to
That's
use it.
That's weird because...
the gun shop owner was like looking at you. No. Like I no, bought- you're, this one's too much for you. I don't want the money.
The smart linked weapons, I didn't have a data jack, and so it said I couldn't use it, but I purchased them anyway out of the store.
Yeah, but just, could you have put them in your weapon slot?
Let's just roll
no,
back.
I don't think I could, but...
Yeah. I just want to roll back for a second, because Scott really just made me think.
Yeah.
The gun store owner says you don't know how to pull this gun's trigger. Like, what gun has a gun skill requirement?
Guns basically have a point and click interface.
Yeah, I mean, it makes great comedy, but it's just still a game, so... Well, you know, they have to enforce the restrictions at some point. And it's just where, you know, they want to do it at the store. Do they want to do it?
Just don't make it available. Just don't even
you're
show
not
it.
As good at with it.
Yes, that's a different system. That's the that's like good. Slowly degrade system.
Those systems
versus,
exist already.
No, I understand.
But not
that.
For this game.
Yeah.
No, what those systems exist in this game. You get, you know, you put points in close combat, you get more damage. You get points in or strength, you get more damage. Points in close combat, you hit more. Points in swords, you do more crits. All of those are. Independent yeah. of your weapons, but then the weapons are also locked by arbitrary restrictions.
I mean, so did you need 1 point or did you need like 5 points in something?
3 points was one I was going for that one yeah. weapon, but I think there are 5 point restrictions on weapons. I don't know.
See, I didn't run into that problem because all the weapons I wanted to buy, I always had like points for. So I just
well, this is my sidearm, right? I'm like yeah. a melee guy, but I wanted a gun. Yeah. So I really want this gun, and I need 3 points in it.
What
so.
They should have done is they should just not show it in the inventory. Like they just don't make it available to purchase.
Or they tell you you don't have the point requirements.
No, they you should have not made a requirement for.
Yeah, no, see,
you just can't
see,
use it.
You're thinking about it the wrong way. See,
they
those
already
points,
locked it by time.
No, well. You can buy it, right? But see, the thing is that you don't know how to maintain it, so it always jams.
I will pay someone to maintain it.
Well, see, that's not an option in the game.
See, you could add that system. Like, you can equip it.
I've got so much friggin' money. I will pay someone to keep my gun clean.
I was just thinking, like, you know, our last month's game, right? An epic.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, if you don't have the points for it, you suffer penalties.
Right.
That's yeah, one that way was to implement cool. The that system, was actually really good.
Except for uniques, because if you don't have the skill requirement, you can't equip it at all.
Right.
So that's what it sounds no, like. No, Shadowruns uses that aspect of yeah. The unique aspect.
It's just again another thing with my theme of you know, this is not an this is not an RPG. This not this
it's
is
video
a game.
Gaming.
It's a
yes.
video game.
Yes.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't understand why you're saying it's not an RPG. Those are video games too. And I mean, there's a ton of RPGs out there that are gamey. Like
open-ended,
all the JRPGs are all gamey.
Yeah. No. It's true. It's that's obviously not the right word. And there is yeah. just a difficulty. Expressing the word that
yeah.
that makes it. I mean, open world is not the right word. Open ended is not the right word. I really don't know how to say that I want this to be more free form,
more character customization,
and more like you're playing a person in this world and not like you're playing a video game. Like you know,
not trying to get the high score,
no, it's,
right?
It's,
so
it's more like a pen and paper RPG where all the options are on the table. And you're just
you can grow
getting
your character,
access to them based on yeah. how much you've played, not based on when they're arbitrarily made available.
So what's like a game that does this really well?
A video game?
Yeah, I'm just asking. I want to know like what the game is that you think.
I already said Unepic, right?
Because I definitely see a problem with variety.
One aspect.
And I do see a few problems with like the systems. Like it doesn't have like a gradual work into the items instead of like it has hard cutoffs. But
here's just many different examples cover yeah. many different bases, right? Diablo. Items have level requirements. You can't equip the item unless you meet the level.
And I hate that system.
See, you hate
but
that
system.
But
that's an RPG.
That's an RPG as well. I'm just saying, you know, Chris just wants a certain kind. Like here, okay, so that's Diablo. But you can carry the item with you and equip it later.
Right.
Okay, when you meet the level requirement. Okay, Unepic, you know, back to that example, you can buy whatever weapon you want and you suffer penalties when you want to use that weapon that's below your
there was other
skill
equipment
level.
That you couldn't do that with.
No, that's another aspect. Yeah. You know, there's
which
unique
really
equipment,
odd.
Unique items and armor.
You know, I've been
as a quote unquote not a level requirement, but a skill requirement.
Yeah.
And well, that is
you know,
what
I've been
Shadowrun emulates. Go
ahead. Yeah, I've been watching some Saints Row 4 movies. And they actually have a decent system where you could actually just get the item, right? But the thing is, you just get your skill points and you improve the item. I mean,
yeah, you that's a different
I mean,
system.
You you use it and stuff, but you I mean, you're not doing much damage or doing anything with it. But later on, you're like, oh, I'm specializing in it,
yeah,
and
you're doing
I'm
bonus.
Using this a lot, so I'm doing more damage with it. So I kind of like that system.
See, I like that system too. I like where your weapons actually have the stat of their own and grow.
Yeah,
and you have a stat to improve the weapon
now,
as well.
Shadowrun does have that though, right? I mean, they have the stats of the weapon, but as far as you like whether you're to hit and your crit, that's all based on like the skill that's with that you have with that weapon.
And so, now I mean, why do you have the skill restriction that I can't even take this weapon with me?
Well,
I can't even equip this weapon because
you
I don't...
can not take it with you, but you can keep it in your stash the whole time. It's not like in Diablo you can equip it. You have to keep it in either, you know, your stash
your
or like on your person.
Yeah, in middle of the game, right? When I level up, I can swap out the weapon and equip it. Shadowrun,
right.
I get enough karma.
Right.
I can level my skill. Now why can't I take it out of my inventory?
Because
my
that would be gamey, right? To all of a sudden be like, I know how to use this in the middle of an intermission.
Right.
I'm just saying, I mean, they're actually preventing that kind of gaminess forcing you to keep it in your stash the whole time.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about this. I've not been paying attention for the last minute. And I've been mulling over Paul's question of what game does it. And I think this is a very Blizzard-esque mechanic. Like, WoW has... maybe created this. I don't know if I'm that might be too recent, but lots of games do this arbitrarily, trying to restrict the environment to create some semblance of balance. And I really think that Diablo and World of Warcraft and those games really have pushed this mechanic forward. But games that don't do it, they exist and they're fun, like Terraria, Minecraft.
Right. Minecraft,
you could just drop a person like the best gear and suddenly he's awesome. And older RPGs, like, you know, you could play Mume and, you know, drop some epic gear on some guy and, you know, he's not high level.
He can specialize
but
he's
fast, better
with that stuff.
Yeah.
But he's still going to be, it's, I guess.
So those are really different types of games. Like Mume is like a multiplayer game where, like, you don't have access to the high level equipment unless someone like twinks you or something like that.
But
right. And the same thing kind of with Minecraft.
But see,
right?
They're trying to artificially restrict that, right? By you know, they know people are going to go drop gear that's better than the person could possibly get, so they want to force you to play in this other restricted way. And I think that sometimes there's a place for that, but most of the time it's just kind of an artificial restriction that makes me uncomfortable.
I don't think so. I really think there's huge differences in Mume and Minecraft. I mean, just the way you play those games. This is a game where. Or in Shadowrun, where it's very linear and you're progressing through the levels, and they want to make, you know, they want to meet the challenge of where you're supposed to be at that level, which is why they unlock the gear slowly like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it would be a totally different game if someone just dropped a bunch of gear on you.
I think the thing that drives me nuts about games that are very linear like this is it seems like you're just rinse repeat a lot of the same things you're doing over and over again. There's no change in the gameplay or the game plan of what you're doing. So you go in, you clear out the stuff. Okay, all the enemies are dead. Now I got to go check every possible room for secret items. And then, okay, when everything's done, I can exit the scene. I mean, it's just, I don't know.
I think almost all games have that this day, though.
Yeah.
And if anything, Shadowrun is not loot driven. You don't have to worry about the secrets so much.
Well,
I do understand about replayability and that there's a lot of repetition. I'm trying to really think of a game that doesn't have that repetition. Like the first thing that came to my mind when you said that was XCOM, because XCOM.
I was just thinking about XCOM. Yeah. Like this is exactly my problem with the new XCOM versus the old XCOM is that the old XCOM let you do things which were not they weren't as restrictive of your options and your assignment of stuff. I mean, there still was this gear progression, but made more sense than just, you know.
You just didn't research it yet at that time. Yeah.
Right. But you just could assign things in weird configurations that maybe broke the game and they weren't always trying to control every decision you made so that you got some specific experience.
So I understand what you're saying. I think game design has kind of progressed since the days of XCOM, and there's a reason that Blizzard games are so successful, and is that they really do control the experience you have, and they try to match it based on like your character, how he is, and how he's supposed to be versus the challenge, and they do a very good job at doing that. And that's, I mean, Whereas like XCOM, the original, can actually be a very cutthroat game in a certain sense. It does give you a lot of freedom, but it also makes it, you know, it is also is fairly hard. Whereas like the most recent XCOM, it really just kind of guides you through. And I guess it really kind of depends on what kind of experience you want these days. You know, I'm not the one that wants to sit there and experiment forever and just try to figure out like, okay, this is how I'm supposed to min-max now. So this is the way I should be playing after I've already played 20 hours. Whereas I want to go through the Shadowrun kind of with a guided experience and and I have more fun that way.
So you want a big brother?
But the thing is, yeah.
I mean, I'm not a big brother kind of a fan. I like God mode. I'm a God mode. Yeah. Right.
Like I said, I'm not totally against the way the game was implemented, and I really think Anthony's right in what he said originally, which is that this is a complete package, isolated experience. I just wanted more free form. Pen and paper kind of RPG experience where you got more options, you got to pick your thing, your progression as you wanted it rather than as it was fed to you, and it was more repetition, slower gains, you know, that you play different missions.
And so I mean, as far as the character progression goes, I can see where you're coming at for the weapons. For the actual like skills and the way you spend your karma, though, that seems almost entirely free form.
Yeah, I like that. I really like that. They did the karma well.
No, there's problems with that too. And Ricky was the one who posted this, though he's not here to explain it. But magic is wrong, right? You can be a shaman and a hermetic mage at the same time, which makes absolutely no sense to the lore. Anyway, if that's
so, just a quick question: nitpicky. Like, what was the problem with that? I mean, I understand like from a game system point of view that you couldn't do everything like the best if you're like kind of dabbling in both areas. But what was like the problem with
what is the problem with that?
Yeah, from the lore perspective, like what in the original Shadowrun? I'm just asking you.
So hermetic mages are they're methodical and they get their magic by. Following structured routines on how to cast spells and how to make things happen. And shamans are in touch with nature and they get there from spirits and have chaos. A spirit totem.
Right. So, but my question more is like, did the original game prevent you from doing both of those things?
Absolutely.
Oh, it did.
You picked a tradition and you could only be one type of mage.
Yeah.
You couldn't be an adept and you couldn't be a physical adept, a mage and a thing at the same time. And in the newer versions, there's technomancers, which is Baron Samadhi's rule, where you can get into the Matrix through just your mind, not having cyberware. But in this game, all bets are off. You be a decker.
They want you to be
also is a physical adept and cast.
They don't have those strict restrictions.
Right. Well, you could couldn't you always be a decker that could be a physical adept?
You could always be. You could always get a little bit of cyberware. Yeah, that hurt your things.
Well, it's only 0.5. I mean, it's pretty small.
Yeah. It rounds up to one, but yes, it is pretty small. You could always do that. You're right. You could always go the technology and magic route, but the restriction is you can't be.
Yeah.
So all the types. You can't mix the magic and match magics.
Yeah. Is special. I see.
So that's all Ricky's pointing out.
Yeah.
Because he was aware of that.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, did not register with me.
Yeah, old Shadowruns, the pen and paper game, seemed like it really discouraged multi-classing. It seemed like...
That's good. You know, you had an archetype, you fit in, you specialized. And really, even the old Shadowrun was awesome because it had skills and then concentrations and then specializations, so it's like three tiers of really drilling down what your skill is good at.
Right.
Well, they kind of have the similar concept in this game.
Yeah, they do that, but
except you have so much karma that
you become a multi-classer.
And it's not, well, they have concentrations, they don't have specializations.
Well, you have, yeah, you're right, because the first one was a skill,
right?
No, or anyway, not, no, or, they, I mean, no, they did quickness, then
but what's that?
Range,
that's an attribute,
combat,
right?
Range combat. Oh, that's right. Skill. It's attribute.
And some of the groupings were weird. Like charisma, like some of them were much more powerful than others. Like charisma was the...
For
spirit shamans. Control shamans.
Yeah.
It also could really change your your interactions with the
RPG aspects, right?
Yeah. So you got the lore skills.
I like that, right? That's one part about the game I liked was that...
because no one ever chooses charisma.
Yeah, right. Dumps that.
Yeah. No one ever chooses charisma. This kind of game kind of made you want to choose charisma.
I put some points in charisma just because I'm like, I'm missing out on all these opportunities.
Exactly. I wanted this.
I was level 6 in charisma as a troll. Because, you know, I just wanted
Max
to make
it out as a troll.
It was totally gamey, right?
It was a like smooth troll.
I wanted to have all the options for charisma available to me that came up in conversation. So
I didn't go that far. I wanted one more, what are those called?
Lores.
Yeah, or
etiquettes.
Yeah, etiquettes. One etiquettes. More etiquette. I'm like, oh, hey, there, I can get an easy etiquette right there. I bought that, and then I didn't touch it the rest of the game.
So just as a quick description, at certain tiers in the skill system, you unlock new
abilities.
So like you put 2 points into charisma, then you get what's called an etiquette, and etiquettes are like corporate, ganger, security. Mm-hmm. You know,
there's a lot of etiquettes.
There's a lot of etiquettes.
There were. Yeah. Some of them were useless. I saw one academic one.
Right.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's what I like about this module, Dead Man's Switch, is that they try to cater to RPG aspect, right? They're trying to cater to...
But if you have that etiquette, then you can trigger certain conversations. Mm-hmm. Very rarely, a conversation will be tied to that specific etiquette, and then you know what to say to get something to
happen. I really...
It pays to have Shadowrun etiquette, though.
I didn't get that.
Could have made a lot more money if I had it.
Yeah.
That's why I opened up... that's why I got invested in another etiquette.
I know,
so
me
that
too.
Just in case it showed up, right? I'm corporate and security. That sounds like they go together.
Right.
Maybe corporate is what got me $100,000.
Yeah, I think
it
probably
I don't
did.
Know.
Yeah. I really felt, though, that the dialogue's choices I made really didn't make that much of a difference.
Yeah.
I
think... So I totally agree with you, and they didn't. But I wasn't grading it based on like whether they made a difference or not, because I kind of knew that the scale of this game was pretty small, so I didn't think they wouldn't go into big like tangents or anything.
Okay, you're talking about like how they affect the overall gaming.
I think that's a lot of in the way they sell it. Like, you know, Mass Effect, they really sold it on like your decisions matter, and then when they didn't matter, I was pissed off. This game, they didn't sell it as decisions matter, so when decisions didn't matter, I didn't really care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I thought just the dialogue was just a way to kind of like, kind of have the world come alive and let
you learn about the.
I just find it learn about the merchants. Kind of felt pissed that I spent all this time reading all this dialogue, and I'm now not getting any payoff for it.
So, what was your charisma when you got to the point where you were a janitor?
4.
It was 4.
Because that's the second etiquette.
Everybody broke the game. When you have charisma 4 at that point, it's super easy. Like the janitor tests, like the 3, you got to plant the 3 bugs on the phones. There's 3 different rooms, and each one you have to convince the person to leave the room. And it's a 3-part test. You have to, it's a 2-part test. You have to select 2 correct conversation options, and then they'll leave. But if you have charisma 2, you only need to select 1, and then you just select the charisma option, and then they'll leave. Or if you have 4, then you don't have to select any. You just select the charisma 4 one, and they leave automatically.
So you think we broke the game?
So everybody seemed to have picked up 4 by the time they got there.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you didn't even have to try that challenge. Like, they designed this challenge, but it didn't even come into play.
I mean, it's true that we had that charisma, so it made it easier. But I kind of liked the breakup of the combat missions with like these other kinds of missions where you didn't actually have to fight
like,
anything.
When you're first trying to break into the Brotherhood, like I liked how like there's many ways to do it. I didn't because, you know...
Yeah, how did you do it?
See, I don't remember. I was trying to do everything, right? Like I went to the stove with the kerosene. I was like, oh, you could set the kerosene on the stove. Like, oh, but I don't want to trigger anything major yet. I want to go explore all these other options.
Yeah.
I don't remember how I did it, but then I came back to the stove and that option was gone because I guess I completed it through some other means.
I actually totally agree. I think this was the best parts of the game were the RPG, like exploring puzzle kind of games.
Yeah.
And Gloria said this in the email. There were no alternatives to combat. If there was combat, it had to happen and you had to fight it.
Yeah.
But everywhere else, there were like alternate paths and your skills mattered and... not everywhere else, but other places there were actual options to how you progressed. And this is something I complain about with the Payday game. I don't know if you know what Payday is, but you're like a group of 4 guys who commit bank heists. it almost always goes to shit. Like, the whole game is is supposed to devolve into heat, where you're just fighting to survive and escape. And
there's never the perfect bank robbery.
There can be. It's extremely rare and extremely hard.
And you need, like four of your best friends.
And
right?
You need four of your best friends. You need to be working really well together. Nice. Some of them are there's one or two that are really easy to do cleanly, but most of the time, it's almost impossible to do it cleanly. And it has to devolve into this firefight. And I felt bad about that because I want the game to be like, I'm this elite shadow runner. I can go in and I'm this elite bank guy. I could go rob a bank mm-hmm. and not set off the alarms every single time.
See, that's I don't think I was able to experience it fully because I was experiencing it fully. I was going around and donning every single costume. I was trying to be a completionist and just do everything. Like I copied a super an ID card, mm-hmm. but I didn't need the ID card because I was already like the master father of the Brotherhood. And right. I was able to walk through without being questioned. But I still went through all that. I was you could be a janitor, right? Have the janitor's clothes,
right?
And then you knock out the father and put on his clothes and copy. I don't know. There's many different things, but I did everything. So I'm not sure how I completed it.
I did just the ID card route. I didn't do the janitor or anything. I just copied the right ID cards, and then I found the master ID cards.
So you went in the back door.
I guess so.
Do you have to distract the cook to leave so you can go into the secret entrance?
No, I didn't distract the cook. I just opened the door.
You went past the security guns?
Yeah.
Okay, so you didn't. There, the key card gives you access to the secret door behind a vending machine in the kitchen.
No, okay, so I had access to that, but there was something where like I could open it.
Yeah,
but you needed decking or something like that.
Oh no,
I couldn't do it.
See, I opened that secret door and it says you need to let your party in first before you can use this access because I guess it was going to a new area.
Yeah,
right.
But I don't want to go that way. I want to go through the security sentry guns, right? So right. I went in, hello, oh, father, yeah, go right ahead.
Right.
But I also had the ID card, but I was already wearing his suit or something. I don't know.
And when you get the card, that opens a secret door behind that thing, and you need the party in first, and then you go through that secret door, and it takes you like a back way to another map,
uh-huh.
Which has some reward like if you go through an office and there's like a lootable chest or something in there.
Jeez, I might have gone through that back door, even though I was able
but
to go through the sentries.
But if you went through the sentry guns, you didn't go through that back door.
See, I don't know which way I went now because I might have come all the way around because I want to bring my party into this route. But I was able to get by the sentries.
I tried exploring. That's the thing. Sequence.
I don't know how I got through because I tried doing everything. I got the ID card, the room, the clothes. I couldn't set the kerosene on fire though. I didn't know what that was going to do. Because that option went away.
Well, I never set the kerosene on fire, but I did use the stove to ruin my ID card. Did you guys do that?
No, I dipped it in something to ruin
oh,
it.
Oh, your
I
stove,
think.
Huh? Yeah. You see? This is great. No, I dipped it in a paint thinner.
Okay, that's what I did too.
Or chemical agent or something, and it ruined it.
Yeah.
And then you got to go get a new one. And
And then you actually had to pay attention and look through all the the little
the
dormitory
names
uh-huh. and figure out the codes and everything. Did you do that?
No,
I couldn't figure it out.
Oh, I figured it out.
Well, there was like a bunch of computers you could read and cross reference information and then use it to reassign the card with information about that person.
Yeah, so I reassigned the card, and then you could just walk into the next room, and then you could search somebody's clothes, and you found like the card that was really good, and then you just walked in.
Right.
Oh my god! I just know one item in the dorms led to another. Like,
you can convince the front gate girl to go get a signature from Maria Mercurial in order to steal a card, or you could just go get a card from right next to the machine that prints them.
Oh, I did the first one.
See,
I convinced
her
to go,
and they wouldn't let me get another card because I already have a blank card,
right,
or something like that. Like the game prevents you from exploring every option, but I'm trying to explore every option. And I didn't need to, even though I ruined my card, I didn't have to give it to the guy to make me a new one because I was able to get into the machine and make myself one.
Anyway, I thought in general that they should have had kind of more of that because I really had fun. I mean, no knock against it because I thought it was great what they did, but just more of that would be great.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the one piece of combat mechanics that has overshadowed all of my opinions on this, and it really inexplicably upset over how they handled this, and they could have easily have changed it, and it's just the way it is, and I should be able to accept it, but I can't. And that is, when the main character dies, game over.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
It doesn't matter if there's somebody there to pick him up. If the main character dies, that's it. Now, Paul probably didn't experience this because he never died.
Never died.
But I was a melee guy. I was a tank. You know, I put 13 or 14 points into body. I was expecting to go up there and get beaten up, but take the damage from my team. Yeah. And so I went down a lot.
Yeah,
and
what's the point in having Doc Wagon?
And that's where I'm... That's what...
It's to resurrect your friends.
Doc Wagon doesn't resurrect people.
I invest Doc Wagon for myself.
No, it doesn't resurrect you, the main character.
You're right, but it resurrects people. And
it's a kind of med kit.
Yes.
It doesn't just resurrect people. It's the Phoenix Down of the
So it brings you back up with some life.
Except that you can't cast it on one of the characters.
So, no, I lost it. So you said it's not a med kit or is a med kit?
It's like a med kit. You use it on somebody else.
He's a life potion.
When they're dead.
Use it on someone else when they're dead.
Yeah.
And the varying degrees of Doc Wagon is just like how strong...
How much hit points they get back.
Yes. Yep. I think that your issue here is more of a Kickstarter issue for the Doc Wagon than it is
I'm definitely disappointed by...
Yeah.
No. I'm disappointed that you can't give a Doc Wagon to somebody else, have your tank go down, and then have him revived.
Right. No, well,
if that tank is the main character.
That's right.
Yeah. See, yeah, when I think of Doc Wagon, it's like I'm enrolling in the service for myself.
Well, see, and there's a disconnect between the pen and paper description of Doc Wagon and the Doc Wagon trauma kit, which is in the game. But the Kickstarter explanation, and this is the Kickstarter problem, is they sold the Doc Wagon ability as a crack team of elite soldiers will come and pull your people from the fire if things go bad.
Like the pen and paper.
Like the pen and paper game, which is you hire basically an ambulance service with guns.
Yeah.
And they will come, you wear a life alert, and if you get hurt, they come extract your body and resurrect you if they can.
Yeah, they actually know what missions you're doing. They're just waiting outside the door, ready to come in just in case.
But basically, that's what Doc Wagon is in pen and paper. In this game, it's a med kit that only heals dead people. And it only heals dead people if they're not the main character. And it was super disappointing because the disconnect between the description in the Kickstarter and the implementation, the disconnect between the pen and paper and the implementation.
They shouldn't even have called it Doc Wagon then.
They call it Doc Wagon Trauma Kit.
No, it's Doc Wagon Trauma Kit. It's like a portable Doc Wagon, right?
And a defibrillator.
Doc Wagon is...
But it was a major problem for me because I was a melee guy, because I was up front, because I was not playing in the meta that you were, where I was
the tank, too. I just didn't die.
How were you the tank?
Because I was the guy in front with the guns.
Rather behind cover.
Everybody else was. Yeah,
further away, okay.
Who wouldn't be behind cover? You're crazy to run out there.
You don't know what's behind that corner. The guys just pop out of nowhere.
Like, all my guys run Overwatch all the time.
Well, speaking of which, melee has a problem that you need to be able to see the guy you're going to attack before you. Mm-hmm. And range has the same problem. Like, you can't attack someone you can't see, but...
with melee, you see them. Like, I want to step out of the room for a second.
Well, you have to walk one action at a time.
Right.
And not three actions, you know.
Right, so if you're like one square away from a guy, but he's around a corner, then you have to walk two actions to move and attack him.
Right, but you can, can you see him after your first one or your second one?
You see him after the first one, and then you use the second one to attack him.
Yes, so it comes out the same.
It comes out the same, except that...
You just have to be careful.
Melee has this ability to do charges.
Yeah.
Right, where you can... I'd move and attack in the same action.
Mm-hmm.
But
comes out the same as long as you can see him after your first move. That's my point. Because then you can still move the one and attack
him. Right, but if your first move could have attacked him, like if you move next into the square next to him.
So you're like, still within range also. Yeah, right. Then that's an issue.
Like,
but that's the same with guns, right? Doesn't that work kind of like, you know, common sense? Like you can't charge a guy you can't see?
Well, no. I mean, first of all, it's a turn-based game, right? So you're going back and forth and guys are going to be fixed in locations. But say you walk out of a door and you lose sight of a guy.
You like know the guy's
there. And you know he's there. Mm-hmm. You can't walk back in and attack him.
You can actually move a different guy in and then
you
attack
could.
I've done that several times just to spot. Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things, like, what I wanted to simulate was I'm going to charge through this door and attack the first person I see.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is you charge through the door, and then you're like, okay, now I take a second action to attack the first person I
see. There's other problems that are like this that also piss me off. Like, if you were going to run in and you wanted to go, like, a certain way or get behind cover or whatever it is, except in the middle of that, there's an event that interrupted
me. Oh, it eats up your action.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I'm not buying cover. I need to spend their action point. Right. It blows my all my plans, right?
Yeah.
So annoying.
That's why I told Chris, like, oh, like my final move, right? All my team's gone and everything. Triggers the event, and the enemy takes a turn.
Right.
Right.
And you're stuck there.
Yeah.
But I'm not fond of the action point using for move, and I wasn't fond of it in XCOM, and I'm not fond of it in this. But one scenario that I got into was I changed scenes, right? And then I moved my guys up, and they triggered the enemy, and then my turn ended, and I'm like, what? I only moved one action point. Why did I lose my turn? It's because I only had one action point when I transitioned through the next scene.
Yeah, I noticed that.
And then they started
too.
You like it, like at it's the end of your last turn.
Mm.
Yeah,
I think that's what I was talking about actually.
But yeah, no, I think that I much prefer like you have movement points and you can continue your move. And if they want to interrupt it with dialogue, that's fine. But you still have some more movement points. I didn't like. I could make mistakes with the movement, and because the actions, it's a whole action point. You could move your guy into the wrong position. There's no movement planning. You could move somewhere that you didn't want to go.
You accidentally click and you accidentally go too far.
I had a problem where I couldn't highlight the person I want to move because a bigger model was in the way.
I'm a troll. Both of my guys were trolls. So if you're like, if you're standing in the box below the guy that you want to attack. There's almost no chance that you can click on the guy.
Oh my
that you
gosh! Okay, so I can see that. Okay, I can see that as a major problem because I already had like I see the highlight over the character, so I just have to keep clicking, but I got to make sure I don't move.
Right.
Sometimes I will move spend my movement or spend my action point to move instead. Yeah, it's annoying just trying to target somebody.
So I don't think it's the action point system per se that is like the real issue. Because I mean, there are other ways to get around that and still have the action points. Like if you knew a guy was on the around a corner or something like that that you'd seen previously, you could just solve that by say like having like a silhouette of the guy or his last known location, so you can know that you want to go over there and attack the guy.
Well, I mean, if the action points were spent to buy movement points, then I would be more okay with it. Because it's not just that. It's like, yes, if you know the guy's there and you can't, I want to simulate running in. Even if I don't know the guy's there, I want to run in and attack him.
Yeah, because you'll have.
In the room. I just don't know exactly where I'm gonna be able to get to him.
Yeah,
and if I had another spotter, I could do that. But if like my guy was technically around the wall and couldn't see him, he could charge if the game mechanics were already set up in such a way that someone else spotted and told you exactly where he was.
You could also have like an action point to just run in and attack someone if you see them or something like that.
Right.
See, the thing I like about the action point system, and I wish XCOM actually had adopted something like Shadowruns, because XCOM, it was more like a move or a move fire system and not really an action point system.
Right.
Whereas in Shadowrun, they actually gave you a lot more just kind of variety of what you could do with your action points. And they had variable costs for everything. Like, some spells are 2 action points, some are 1. And
XCOM 1 did it perfectly, though, with time units.
See, I don't like XCOM. I mean, XCOM 1 was good for the time, but I think, I mean, again, I might disagree with you, but I like these simpler, more elegant systems that actually make the game more fun for me.
Okay.
Well, I do agree that being able to spend your action points and having more than just 2, you can do a variety of things. You fire 3 times or whatnot. But
did you get your 3rd one through the game? It was a storyline.
When you get a karma threshold, Ricky said something about a 4th one. I don't know how that happens, but apparently there's some bug can trigger a 4th one.
Oh, a glitch? Okay, I don't know what he's talking about, but it was a glitch.
Yeah, maybe if you go back in time through the story point where they assign you the 3rd one, you could get a 4th.
Mm.
I don't know.
In his email, he also mentioned something about Overwatch. That was in the same sentence, so I don't know if that had something to do with it.
Hmm. Yeah, I think it was just in the same category of like bugs that are funny.
Oh.
I had a favorite piece of music. I got the soundtrack. Did you guys listen to the soundtrack I shared with you?
No, but I can hum all the music for you. I mean, they really only have like 3 pieces of music, or at least seemed to me.
No, there's like 20.
I'm sure there are, but there's like 3 pieces they play over and over.
Yeah. But I like the one that they use for combat. It's called Noel Sheen. And anyway, I was playing it for you guys earlier.
Actually, I like the opening music. It's kind of annoying, but the first time I heard it, I was like, wow, this is pretty good, because it kind of felt Shadowrun-y to me. But then like the 10th time, I was like, this is kind of loud and annoying.
Yeah, it is a little intrusive. I definitely agree. Like when the game starts up, it's like in your face.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, the music didn't stand out to me.
So, really, the last thing that I don't know if you guys have anything else you want to say before we close out, but there another Kickstarter reward was an in-game ability. And I really think they dropped the ball on the Kickstarter thing because they didn't explain at all how your Kickstarter rewards work. Like the dock wagon thing, the Kickstarter was you get this dock wagon contract. And when we found out the dock wagon was just a med kit, essentially, I was disappointed. And Glorious is also a backer. And he said that you probably the thing for you is that your dock wagon is just going to always be there. Like every game, you'll have a dock wagon kit. So
you can't use on yourself.
So I looked and I didn't. When I was playing, I didn't have a dock wagon thing. I only had one and I bought it. So I don't know where I was supposed to get it as a Kickstarter reward. So I played through a second time, and about two scenes into the story, you just suddenly get a drop of five dock wagon kits. Like it go into your stash. And I didn't get it the first time because I guess I hadn't entered the code when I reached that scene. So I didn't get the reward because I hadn't entered the code soon enough.
But the rewards only came in at one point in the story.
But the rewards only came in one story.
So you only got five.
You got five dock wagon kits. That was your backer reward.
Platinum?
And it was supposed to be like a permanent thing. Yeah, platinum.
So $5,000.
Like $5,000 worth of things. And they're useless because, like, you know, I'm always the tank and I'm the one that goes down. But that was the reward. And it just was really hard for me to determine what it was and how it went into the game. And, you know, ultimately Doc Wagon was disappointing, so it was a disappointing reward.
Just as a devil's advocate here, how would you envision the real Doc Wagon working? Like,
I could fix it in a heartbeat. I would do is say,
well, no, you're talking about the you can resurrect your own guys by giving them the kits. No.
I would say Doc Wagon is an item you hold that if you go down, you resurrect. That's all it would change, and that would make me happy.
Right. Okay, so fine. But that's not really what I'm talking about. Like, because I think, is that really the complaint? I think the complaint is more like, I didn't get to see the armed medics come.
That would be awesome, though. But you know, tell me how awesome that would be.
It would be awesome, but I think that would just, like, that.
Well, sure. Okay.
It would take a lot of work in the game.
No. So your screen fades to black, right? And then you wake up at the start of the mission. And there's these guys around you, like, doing CPR, and they're like, you're good now. And then they leave. And you're still in the map. You haven't left the map. You're just back at the start point of the map, and they've pulled you back, and the combat's still going on way over far away, but they've pulled you back to the start location.
So, well, Doc Wagon doesn't work like that either.
But it would be more entertaining.
That would be more entertaining, and it would ring true of Doc Wagon.
Yeah, somewhat. But Chris's original suggestion. Because
somebody came and got you.
Is that, you know, it's not Doc Wagon license or band.
Set with a med kit option. I was upset that it was a med kit option that did jack shit.
Exactly. I think it's a trauma kit, right? Like a defrib kit or something, right?
That doesn't
like,
work for me. That's the problem.
Yes, it doesn't work on me. You. But when you say it does jack shit, that means, I mean, you're kind of like applying that to everyone's usage of it.
It's a very expensive item that very rarely gets used.
I used it on a couple guys. You know, I think I must have found them somewhere because I never bought them.
But I did
carry him around with me, and I use him on some guys I just wanted to resurrect in the mission.
I let all the guys, I had like two guys die, and I just let them die because I'm like, oh, I just hired them. They're going to go away at the end of the mission anyway.
Die permanently? Do you know?
I don't know. Probably not.
Okay.
They have their own dock wagon. For reals.
The real dock wagon. Yeah. No, I agree with Chris. I mean, in spirit of the game or the pen and paper, like, you know, dock wagon's supposed to, like, you know, bring
protect you
back. Yeah, right? So, like, it's, you know, treated like Life 3 spellcast from Final Fantasy, right? You fall down, you come back up with certain hit points.
Right.
That's the minimum. That was your suggestion. Yeah. That was your quick fix. I agree with that.
I would go for that.
It's a little small little kit that, you know, brings you back.
And even that makes sense because Doc Wagon, you know, steps in when you're hurt.
So would that be infinite? Like,
you just use it. And then it's expended.
The battery
it
runs out.
Oh, yeah.
The Kickstarter reward should be one that never runs out.
Well, right? then the game would be broken at that point, right? I mean, it'd be
one per mission.
You just get it back every mission.
Yeah, instead of having to buy it. Yeah.
But then the other Kickstarter reward was an in-game ability, which I assumed would be some sort of skill or, you know, ability that you used in combat.
Huh.
Turns out it was not one that you used in combat.
You had the ability to...
You had the ability to see a character that you could talk to in the bar.
And that character is who?
That you couldn't talk to.
Yeah. Who was it?
Jordan Weissman, the creator of Shadowrun. And he said, hey, thanks for backing me back in 2012. I'm dead now. And he's a ghost, right? But I still have some advice to give you for how to be a good Shadowrunner or whatever. And he, or really not even advice on Shadowrun. What he really did was he talked about the creation of Shadowrun. And it was just dialogue that you could talk to him. And it was the in-game ability to talk to a ghost.
In the Dead Man's Switch module. Ability.
You know, that was for the true fans, though.
Right.
I mean...
It wasn't terribly disappointing, because actually I did enjoy the information. I didn't need another ability. It worked out for me. The problem is, I didn't know that's what it was. Because he was just there in the bar, and it was him, and he was talking about Shadowrun, and in nondescript terms, like kind of in character.
Yeah, you didn't know that was the backer-only ability
right,
you
were given. Because they didn't explain what the backer abilities were, and they didn't tell me anywhere that this was coming in. So I had to do a lot of research to find that. I don't think that was as disappointing to me as Doc Wagon, but it was weird. Mm-hmm. It dropped the ball with the Kickstarter.
Yeah, the game's out.
Well, the game came out.
Delayed? Did it came out on time or delayed?
I don't know. I don't care. As long as the game keeps progressing, I have no expectations for actual time frames. Mm-hmm. So is there anything else?
Yes. I wanted to talk about the healing.
Okay.
And that's because we kind of glossed over it. We didn't really say like what the issue was, because I think a lot of people think here that when you're in an RPG and you have a healing ability, it usually just kind of like heals you for a flat amount or does something like that.
Right.
And the difference in this game is that it only heals your most recent wound. And that's what usually people are complain about. Isn't that
right?
Isn't that the case?
Oh, that's all healing? I only experienced healing with Harlequin at the very end. So
that's how healing works.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
And I thought that was good, except in the off things where, like, you'll take 15 points of damage and then you'll tick for 1 point of a dot, and then your healing will do 1 point instead of 15, even though last turn you took 16.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, my feelings about that is I definitely like the mechanic, because what kind of gets dry in all these RPGs is that your hit points are just basically a bar that you just kind of manage, and it has nothing to do with like wounds or anything like that. And so I kind of like the concept that, you know, the magic in the world could only heal like whatever damage you took last, and everything else is permanent. And there's other ways to manage that, right? Like you do a healing and then you use your med kit or whatever.
Right.
And so I thought that was just like a good mechanic. I enjoyed it. I know other people didn't, but
that's cool. I just thought it was Harlequin's ability. Didn't the shaman have a different kind
of
healing?
There's a ton of guys with healing. You just guys don't hire them.
So the question I have is, what if you got healed twice?
You can only get healed once, and then your wound goes away, and you just have lower hit points.
Yeah, if you tooltip over people, it'll say like wounded 6.
Yep,
that's for healing.
Yeah, like if you got hit for 15 damage, then you got hit by 6, you only get to heal for 6.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And that's really the point that was irritating. Is like it was when it was so dramatic. You know, it's like I got hit for 20 points, and then I got hit for 1 or 2, and
so
then
all I can do is
all
heal
I can do
the...
is heal the 2. But you can heal like 6 weeks later. Like you could be running down, spend 15 turns running through the thing, and then you're like, oh, he has a wound. I'll heal him.
Mm-hmm.
So the proximity doesn't work story-wise. Like, you know, the explanation doesn't work out.
Well, but I mean, it's like it's a different mechanic versus, I mean, the explanation doesn't work out all the time for like, I magically heal you and your bar goes up, you know, when your arm's been chopped off or something like that.
Yeah, it's magic. You know,
right.
The Doc Wagon trauma kit works wonders.
So I just thought as like a mechanic, this was better. Like there was actually some little bit of thought involved, because if I ever took like a 15, I'd be like, okay, I got to heal that right now.
Right.
But if I took like a 5, I'd be like, you know, maybe I won't heal that right now. Maybe I'll wait till I get a 15 and then I'll heal myself. Right.
See, I agree with Paul. I mean, I thought it was an interesting mechanic. I didn't know that was all healing. So yeah, I thought, oh, this is his healing ability is a nerfed one. That's kind of cool. It makes me manage. But then
there were med kits, which actually worked the way you thought healing should.
Yeah, they healed a flat amount, though.
They were a mix and match, though. I mean, that's
not a flat amount. You got to have higher biotech skill, and then you could...
Oh, because I would say, like, if you have 130 hit points...
And biotech increases healing.
I didn't even know there was a biotech skill.
Yeah. It's an intelligence.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, see, I ignore that skill because I'm never using med kits.
Huh. No, there's a lot thrown into that game that I didn't even explore.
Anyway, ultimately... I think for me, summarizing, I was disappointed because I was expecting kind of this RPG thing, and it turned out to be just this one story and just this one video game. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I said I was disappointed at the beginning. I'm kind of wavering on committing to that still now. Now maybe I'm not disappointed because I played it for 50 hours with the construction of the... levels and stuff and some idle time. So I, you know, Steam says 50 hours. I must have been having a good time. I can't totally have hated it. So
you didn't hate it. You're just disappointed.
Yeah. Revised my initial statement to say I expected something else, but what I got was okay. Okay.
Yeah. I had lots of fun with this game. I mean,
so one still has to confirm that shamans don't heal differently.
They
swear they do.
Do not heal differently. But what was I going to say?
Sorry.
Oh, just, who's going to play the next one?
I'll get it for free. Yeah. So I'll play it. Definitely. Yeah.
Are you guys going to play the next campaign that they're coming
next
out with?
Next campaign, a new character.
Don't know.
I don't know.
I think if it's not free, then I probably won't. They say it picks up right where the last story left off. So probably not a new character.
Ooh, $100,000.
But nothing to buy because all your stuff is gated.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Should I spoil? I mean, I want to tell Paul the ending about the Dead Man Switch.
Okay.
Are you going to finish the campaign, Paul?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, we won't spoil it.
Oh, then I won't spoil it.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, he's not dead.
And Scott?
I probably won't. I really felt like I got no payback on all the reading I had to do.
Okay. We'll play a pen and paper session.
Yeah.
And you can play your... That's 18 right. dice That's, assault cannon yes. craziness.
With my wire for reflexes 3.
Okay, well, let's take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about next month's game. And we're back. So next month, we're going to have a selection by me. I get the...
Again by me,
technically. Like I said, last month it was more community choice. But this time is a game I really, really wanted to play. And that game is Crusader Kings 2.
We're really your minions, aren't we, Chris?
Yes. Holding your strings.
He's the host.
Right. I'm in charge of everything. I'm the god of this domain. This kitchen table is all I've surveyed. Okay, so Crusader Kings 2 is a grand strategy game by Paradox Interactive. It's a game where you pick a country and a leader, and you are that leader. And you have influence over other leaders, but you don't have direct control. So, like, maybe your country owns a bunch of provinces, and you have lords that manage the provinces. You can influence those lords, but you can't really say, like, you will do this.
So it's very feudal.
It is. And the game is trying to expand your empire by influencing the effects of people. And there's all kinds of traits, like maybe this guy's an alcoholic, or he's rage issues, or he's a pedophile, or I don't know what. I mean,
this is a map-based game, like a board game, like maps and territories? Yeah.
And I think it's real-time, but it's kind of a downplay. Like, you sometimes you pause, sometimes you progress slowly, and it's kind of downplaying the... combat, like warfare aspects, like a strategy game would be. But there still is combat. So it's you pick any country in the map and you try to expand the empire and you know, get marriages off and you know,
I think there's
great alliances and
I think there's a Game of Thrones mod.
There
actually,
is.
For
and
this.
They rename all the world the characters
I think,
after.
I think I've seen this. This is actually pretty cool. The Game of Thrones mod actually because it actually has all the characters in it and all the sub characters, mm-hmm. which is
yeah,
pretty
I've
amazing.
Heard about that. So you can play like that if you prefer.
I might do that. I might do that.
I think see how accurate it is. Some of the people, depending on the lucky ones, I'll roll randomly and give you one. But there's portraits for all these different rulers, and some ruler, you know, they like get the base game has generic portraits, but then some expansions came out which added more portraits for different races for different you know civilizations. So. I bought some at different times. Some people might get the DLC packs, and some people might get less DLC packs, depending on if you're lucky. But anyway, so this game, warning, will take you probably 10 hours to start to understand how to play it. you're going to need to invest more time watching tutorials or something on YouTube. I'll try to find resources like that and share them with people, but... You're probably not going to get a lot out of this if you just put in the 10 hours we normally put in. But you know,
hey,
that's
man,
all
if
you
I
need
could
to put in.
Take over the Iron Throne. The payoff will be worth it.
I think that's going to be an episode of spoilers I don't want to participate in.
So if you'd like to join us in playing the game of the month and you want to send in your comments or questions about the game, feel free to do so at podcast@10-hp.com or follow us on Twitter @10hppodcast. Now we're going to go into a section called Bonus HP, and this is a section where we get to talk about anything we want for just a few minutes and discuss anything not necessarily game related. So, Scott.
Hey, so what I've been doing lately is at work, I've been watching the Saints Row 4 videos. I found them very entertaining. I don't know. I like how they've done the Saints Row series. They just basically don't care, and they just do it for shits and giggles, really, on a lot of stuff. And I just find it very entertaining, and I'm actually looking forward to when Steam lowers the price on that so I can play it myself.
I'm a fan of the Saints Row franchise, and it has gotten more and more ridiculous as time has gone on. One of the things I like that they do in Saints Row... that they don't do in Grand Theft Auto is they recycle the cities. So like the first two games were in the same city and the last two games have been in the same city.
Right.
So it's like you get to know this place.
Right.
You know, like as soon as you start playing, you're like, I'm immediately familiar with this.
Right. They bring back all the old haunts of... Well, yeah, exactly. They have his old keep and his... It was great how they did it, so...
So are you watching like the story...
I was watching
videos?
The story videos.
Actual walk.
So I actually saw the spoilers and stuff, but it was freaking hilarious. And the way they built it up, it looks like there's a ton of gameplay in it. You could play it for hours and get a ton of stuff. I didn't watch any of the side quests or any of the stuff, but it looked really fun. And I'm
that's a good game as an explanation of a game that kind of takes the... training wheels off, so to speak. They just let you at the mechanics and the
right.
The,
it's basically the city.
Are you talking
that's
about
running.
4 or 3?
3. I haven't played 4.
Okay, because I thought you're 4 talking
is
about
the same
4.
Way. 4 is the same way. They basically put you back in that city. It's I'll give you a spoiler here. It's a simulated. It's a simulation of that city, but they have like 50 side quests you can do, and then the main story quests you can do. But this, if you do the side quests, you get like bonus abilities and you get more money or you get more powers and stuff. And at the end, you become like a super crazy god kind of guy. But
and if you want to go like hijack a tank, you know, and be like driving around this ultra powerful tank, then just you do that right away or you wait until later to do it. You know, you do it whenever.
It really is like an achievement. It's a different kind of game, though.
Yeah.
I mean, would you call it an RPG? I don't think so.
Oh, it's definitely an RPG. Well, because it has RPG elements in that you gain experience and you unlock abilities based on those experiences.
And you're playing a role, a person.
But and you have like an empire that you're building up. You know, you're like buying property and collecting cars and stuff. And RPG elements, right? What is an RPG?
And there's a lot of crossovers.
It's not
these days.
It's not.
It's a video game RPG.
Yeah. Different kind of RPG, another new different type of classification RPG.
You got a role to play in this world.
GTARPG? No.
But you give Saints Row 4 the thumbs up.
Yeah, definitely.
G and I played that a lot. The co-op is really fun.
Oh, I want to. I was looking forward to that, so I'll try that out.
I don't know. Is it still only two-player?
I haven't seen any of the multiplayer videos. I just watched the story.
It's cool because you can, again, unlike GTA, you could play through the whole story multiplayer. Just have another guy. And it's cool. They like have cutscenes and they like tie in the other characters in the cutscenes. But you're always the main character, but the other guys in your party are there.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. What did you say? Other guys? You said it was two player only?
I mean, there's other guys, but yeah, your co-op players in this in the cutscene.
The one thing I noticed about the story is it was very seamless on the transitions and stuff and the dialogue. They did a really good job.
They've done a great job with that series.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking of stopping eating. How does that strike you guys?
Stopping eating?
Yeah, I'm not going to eat anymore.
Is this because you starve? Need money?
Now, have you guys heard of Soylent?
Oh, no.
So there's this Kickstarter. Somebody was working on the idea that they could create a dietary supplement that could be eaten on a daily basis and would
provide you all
the nutrients and vitamins and minerals that you need to survive. And they're getting some good feedback. He's finished this. He's been getting, it's an open formula.
So you're just eating pills every day?
No, it's a shake.
It's like the Jetsons.
Wait, hold on. Who's behind this?
I don't know the name of the guy, but...
What's the Dilbert author's name?
Scott Adams.
Scott Adams. Because I read his book when he was not drawing Dilbert. He had this book and he talks about a burrito that did all this.
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay, so I'm trying to see if this is... No, it's not. Scott Adams. Okay,
So I've been following this. They're kind of in the beta testing and adjusting the formula, but when they get it done, then the formula is going to be made available.
So is the FDA going to say anything about this?
Well, no.
It's just food.
It's just food. It's not a drug. But
they're the Food and Drug Administration.
Yeah, the thing is... That's true.
actually, that is a concern. And the
will your kidney shut down over a few years?
They're saying that they don't have to get FDA approval because the components of it are all FDA approved. They don't use things that are...
Right. So here... But one of the things they're doing, though, is they're kind of saying... These are the ingredients you need to survive, and they're kind of like representing that. Whereas if you sell a piece of lettuce, you never do that. You're just selling food. You're not saying like, this is a complete meal and that you can trust us. If you only eat this, you will still be, you'll get all of your,
until you die of starvation. Right. You're not going to have energy.
Isn't that essentially how organic things work? Like you're saying that this is all natural and there's no definition of organic. And
there is actually a definition of organic. Like that, it's either, I'm not sure if it's the FDA, but there is some committee that will define what organic is in certain.
I thought in organic in chemistry means it just contains carbon.
No, that's just that's the chemistry definition. But as far as like food and things like that go, there is.
Anyways,
there
scientific now, studies that
there
say that
didn't used to be.
So there have been some bloggers that have gotten beta test versions of this and have tried it for a couple of weeks and a
couple of weeks. Wow, that's long.
So the idea is that like you would just be healthier because you don't need any of the extra stuff.
Or you're saving money.
It's both. the goal is
saving time
is,
too.
Two part to save time and to provide a low cost alternative. They're looking for $5 a day as a target number for the cost of this.
So is there some sort of food shortage crisis here in America I'm not aware of?
No,
that's
an
interesting idea. I mean, I've always thought of that kind of that idea is like, why?
But what about in like 5 years when people's kidneys start shutting down and stuff? Because
that's what I think about.
In theory, it's healthy.
Yeah, depends on how it's applied. Like if it's in a shake form, is the body going to be absorbing it all at once?
I can't imagine that this carefully balanced vitamin supplement is less healthy than the way I eat now, which is totally oblivious to any sort of necessary requirements.
You don't go, to Sonic looking at the back of the box, adding up all the calories.
Exactly.
I just have a feeling this is the next Fen-Phen. That's what I feel.
Well, it's not a dietary. I mean, it's not a diet thing. It's not for weight loss.
Right.
It's for, you know.
And fenfen is a drug, isn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, so the Kickstarter page, not it's not Kickstarter, their crowdsourcing page will sell you 30 days of this stuff. And it's 30 average days. So you can eat as much as or as little as you feel comfortable eating because the theory is that the body is going to ask for what it wants. And it's $250 for 30 days of food. Which seems like a good price.
Quote, unquote, food.
Yeah.
Food. How long does it last? Do you have to keep it in the fridge? Is it canned?
So it's sealed in metal bags. It's powder. And then you mix it with water. And then you're supposed to consume it that day.
So you have to buy a month's worth? Can you buy like a day's worth?
You can buy a week's worth.
Just to taste it first.
The weeks.
No, I think that's what you're doing is too healthy. You're making a sacrifice. Like,
yeah.
Well, so
your taste.
You know, so that they
live in life.
They,
what happens when you go to a restaurant?
Bloggers have described it.
No, so, you don't go to restaurants anymore.
No, I know, but that, there's a real social cost there.
Okay, so two things. The way you consume this is in cups full. Like it's hard to drink. Like you could create a gallon of it, but it'd be hard to drink that all at once because it's very heavy.
Does it pass through you well?
Yeah, apparently. It reduces, you know, it's because you're not consuming a lot of waste material. You don't have a lot of extra waste.
So it's all just water that you...
She gets absorbed. Never have to go poo again in your life, right?
Well, probably you do.
I'm just kidding. Water or something.
But no,
it's the perfect
The descriptions of bloggers that I followed have been like, you know, reduces your waste out. Production. You can still shift back and forth between food and things because it's just another kind of meal. It
does your stomach causes enzymes change or
right now they're saying it causes some gas when you transition to it, but not transitioning back.
Yeah, because isn't your body producing a different?
Yeah, I am skeptical too, but I'm interested to try it.
Huh. Sounds good.
What was I going to say there? You mix up a batch. You can eat it as at your rate. You eat lots of meals over the day because it's, like I said, too heavy to eat all at once. But anyway, be interesting.
So yeah, I'm just saying.
That flavor, right? It's reportedly chalky, and the designers say that it's something to do with a protein that they use, and they can reduce that by switching to another protein. But I guess when the Ars Technica guy mixed it with vanilla flavoring, it kind of just covered most
Doesn't
of it.
Doesn't that, like, ruin the balance?
No.
I don't know.
Something extra you got
to
buy.
And that's the thing. Is like, he continued to drink coffee. He continued to do other drugs. Supplemental things that you do. I mean, it's just vitamins,
just
really.
Another meal.
Just another
meal.
Well,
it does replace your food, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you wanted to eat something else, that would be just eating something else.
Sure, but I mean, that kind of...
Doesn't your liver or your stomach produce different enzymes or something because you're just consuming this now?
And also, like, there's bacteria.
I think if it was a balanced diet, then you would continue to produce all the enzymes you need to handle all the different types of foods, right?
I don't know. No, I don't know.
I don't know about
here's
of
the
foods.
Seeing you on the liver transfer liver donor list.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting experiment to say. Yeah, the
I know.
Long term is what you know. No one knows about.
Yeah. Anyway, so I've been thinking about picking up a month's worth and giving it a shot.
Split it into 4 weeks and give
definitely
it
take pictures
worth.
Of your poop.
So the Ars Technica guy dyed the thing.
I thought he died because it's kind of white, right?
Uh-huh. So he dyed it green to make it soylent green.
That's what I thought. Too. Like,
oh, this isn't going well.
And then his poop was green.
Oh, there you
and
go.
Then he dyed it purple another day, and his poop was purple like a few days later.
So it passes
that
through.
That means it's passing through,
later.
Not getting absorbed.
Less, not none. But none was Paul's idea.
So I want to see size comparisons over Todd's joking.
Anyway, Paul?
Yes, everyone knows that I'm a big fan of League of Legends, and the League of Legends Season 3 World Finals are coming up in early October.
Woohoo!
And,
Flying donkeys.
What'd you say?
flying donkeys.
Yeah, Dota's great. So one of the interesting things about this season is that, like last season, all the typical teams that, I don't know, you may or may not know of, that have been popular in the scene all went to the World Finals. You had like your Frost and Blaze from Korea, and you had your CLG, your TSM, and your Dignitas from North America. And then from Europe, you had, you know, Moscow 5 and CLG. And
nice this year, there,
almost all of those teams are not going.
They eliminated?
Okay, so from North America, only TSM is going. Dignitas and CLG aren't going. They've been replaced by basically two new teams, which is Vulcan and Cloud9. And Cloud9 actually has gone on, like, the whole season is 28 games, right? And they won 25 games and they lost three. And they only lost three because of first level team fights. I don't know if you're familiar with these, but, like, you know, the first level, there's no minions. You run around a lot, and sometimes you meet other people in the jungle. And then people will die. And so the problem there is that, you know, they probably didn't ward quite right or whatever. And so they, you know, the two teams clash, and then, you know, one team came away with like two kills, and their team came away with zero. And so, and then based on that gold lead that you have from the very beginning, just snowballs the rest of the game. So it's not really like their gameplay suffered, well, except for their level one team fight. But right. It's just kind of like it was over at level one. So they're just a really, really good team. So we're going to have to see how they do against the Koreans.
Now, when you say these are new teams, that means these are new players, not recognizable names.
So
like people do, because I know when I was following it, like, there's always the big names who are moving around from team to team.
Yeah, so no, you wouldn't recognize any of the names. Mm-hmm. No, yeah, because you would probably know all the people from CLG and TSM.
Yeah.
Yeah, or mm-hmm. Dignitas or Team Curse, maybe.
They should keep all the names of teams and mm-hmm. then just do, like, draft picks of the players and then, you know, form these uber teams, but they're all, like, the same teams every year.
You know, they're actually after the names. Each season that kind of does happen anyway, because they get rid of some people and they pull new people in,
and the whole year to form the team cohesion.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you don't need to design new logos and get your team shirts printed and all that. You have the same teams.
Yeah, right. That's one way to do it. So, but the funny thing is that didn't happen in just North America. That also happened in Korea, where, like, the big teams over there used to be CJ Frost and CJ Blaze, or sometimes they were called like Mig Frost and Blaze or Azubu Frost. anyway, and so, and because Azubu Frost actually made it to the finals last year, they came in second, and that team, both of those teams, aren't going anymore, and there's three new teams from Korea that are going. And the same thing happened in Europe. Only one old team's going, which is Moscow 5, now known as Gambit Gaming. And the team that actually took first place during the season is totally new, just like in North America. And the team that took first place in the qualifiers is Fnatic, and they didn't go last year either. So it's just kind of interesting how much the meta changes just a little bit, that all teams. The old teams just can't deal with it, and all the new teams start, you know, even though they have more experience, the old teams, it doesn't really help. The new blood is really, it's good for the scene. It's really mixing it up. So I'm really pumped to go to Worlds and to,
he's pumped!
And to go go see it and see how it all works out.
Man, I'm just still trying to last hit with Nasus and co-op versus AI, Summoner's Rift.
Yeah.
Try to get back into it, and like, you tell me Nasus is up there again, so.
Yeah.
Field yeah. to play Nasus.
People play him in the jungle a lot too. Yeah. So he gets picked quite a bit in North America, not so much, and quite a bit in Europe, but not so much in Korea.
I always thought you were a closet Lux player.
No, Glorious likes Lux.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Lux is a fun
flying donkeys.
Yeah. So tell me about Dota. I know you've been playing.
Nah,
I've been looking at you.
I don't like. I've just been playing the tutorial. I don't like it.
Oh, okay.
I don't like that you can lose control of your character and like switch to something else. I don't like that you have to go to the secret shop and the normal shop. And
mm-hmm. Can't you just send your dude, your flying donkey?
The flying donkey doesn't go to the secret shop.
Just goes to the normal shop.
Hey.
Oh, I didn't know that. No, see, the thing about Dota is that it's still Dota from right. like, it's I don't know, 8 years ago or whatever. That, like, they didn't change that at all.
The money is so intense. Smoke. Like, the last kills are so important.
Well, they're like important in WoW too.
Like, you kill one minion and you get 50 gold.
Yeah,
and you get like a slow trickle otherwise. You have to have those last kills.
I would argue the same in LoL. I mean, like, if you're playing at a good level, you have to have the last kills too. The difference, though, is that it's easier to do because you can't be denied your last hits. You know that. That's a big mechanic,
I couldn't figure out how to attack my own guys. I tried to do that just to see how it works. But I was clicking and clicking on them, and then I would just walk up to them.
Yeah, because the stats, like if you watch, I watched a lot of Dota recently because I was interested to see how they did it, because they just had their big international tournament where they gave away $2 million or whatever. Uh-huh. And the stats actually have the creep score and the creep deny score, so you can see how well they're actually denying the other person. It's crazy. Like some of them, like the deny score is really, really high, and I'm like, wow. I mean, I just don't want another thing to think about when I'm in lane.
Yeah. I think that the fact that I don't like the 5v5 League of Legends means that I'll never like Dota, because it's only 5v5.
Right.
There's no
there's no other modes.
There's no Dominion. There's no... Like, I guess Dominion's 5v5, but it's different.
Yeah. It's more like a Rothy basin. No.
But even so, I don't like the League of Legends in general.
Right.
I got chewed out yesterday.
By some random person on the internet? Like, and you really took it to heart?
It's like, has you guys seen Mundo do anything this entire game? It's like, look at that build. I'm like, fuck off.
So you Anthony, just use / ignore.
Battle Nations.
Again?
You
talk about that. Okay, go ahead.
No. I joined a guild and...
Guild?
A guild, yeah.
A guild?
A guild.
How does that work?
They're supposed to... They're supposed to be Battle Nations. I voted for Nations or Alliance, but they just chose the name Guild. But anyways, and there's this co-op event going on, and you know we're hitting it pretty hard.
Anthony United joined Alliance of Planets, or the Federated Planet Alliance?
It's a Guild of Nations.
Yeah. No, it's give like them the name of the name of your guild. It's hilarious.
Oh, the Banana Stand Republic. Because there's a shop you can build in a Battle Nations called the Banana Stand.
And there's always...
And the quote is, there's always money in the Banana Stand. And it costs, I think, $200,000 to set up.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, so the Banana Stand Republic is hardcore. They're making me play a lot.
Yeah. Well, I got in order to maintain my membership, or my contributions, I, grind late night.
So you're in a guild.
I'm in a guild.
But, what does that mean?
The guilds are now an official, collection of nations in the game.
Okay. So do you share resources?
No. That's the problem. It's like when the guilds came together, it's just a fancy way to chat. With one another.
Oh, God.
So, no, then they release... I've made these suggestions on their suggestions forums, like have guild wars, like have a guild map and people can attack and occupy resources. But right now, they've finally released something called Boss Strike, which is a co-op event where, the guilds just going against AI and building up points.
Can you at least compare rankings of guilds right now?
Like? No, they can't even compare contributions. They're supposed to, anyways... Yeah,
but doesn't Atlantica Online do that? Like everybody contributes to a score, or something.
No, I don't.
WoW did that. I mean, there was like guild scores and stuff. I don't think it was in WoW, but it was like one of the external things based on.
Yeah,
WoW
no, data. I don't do the PvP in Atlantica Online. Actually, I'm weaning myself off of Atlantica Online. I haven't logged in for like 2 weeks.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
I'm surprised you're still playing. I'm surprised that you logged in within 2 weeks.
I thought you were going to say 3 months or something.
No, I have not actually swung a weapon in Atlantic Online in a long, long time. All I do is log in and
you
craft.
Never swing weapons. Your guys do.
Yeah. Well, right? I'm just You're represented by one of the characters there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but all I do is craft and make all this money and
real money.
No, not real money. Just in-game gold and. I'm sitting on like $17 billion
games or whatever.
Yeah.
The other game I want to talk about is Hearthstone.
Oh, great.
Oh, yeah. I figured this was coming. Go ahead.
This is all you're trying to delay?
No. Oh. I expected this one, and I was surprised it was Battle Nations.
Oh, yeah. No. Hearthstone. I tried showing Scott a really quick game.
Yeah, it's magic with WoW characters.
Yeah. Except it's much more streamlined. It goes fast. I think that's the reason why I'm in... playing a lot of it, enjoying it.
Yeah, I want to play it.
The thing that draws me to Hearthstone is the fact that the skills are really tied to the character. Like,
yeah.
Like, if you're a hunter, then you've got, the skills from WoW that you cast.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of the references. Like, actually, in my arena deck, I had Ragnaros. He's a raid boss of some sort, right?
Right.
Yeah, so it's a lot of references to WoW.
Only the OG awesome raid boss.
Right.
Yeah, really.
Well, the expansion will be Burning Crusade, and I don't know about expansions.
But yeah, no. I was trying to compare this to L5R to Paul. Like, you know, you have a clan. You pick a clan, and they have, you know, clan cards that will work for the clan. But unlike in L5R, you know, other clans can use other clan cards. In Hearthstone, you know, you have these.
And then in the case of Hearthstone, clan is class.
Class. Yes. Yep. Okay. And these classes are represented by. I don't recognize all the figures, but they're represented by major figures like Jaina Proudmoore is the
mage.
Okay. Uthor Lightbringer is the
paladin. They had the druid, the centaur druid guy who was the night
Malfurion.
Elf. Malfurion.
He's a druid, and then the thrall is a shaman.
They had the orc, the super orc leader. He was the warrior. Thrall. Yeah.
Thrall. Yeah. But then the warrior. I don't remember the warrior guy.
Yeah, it was Thrall.
No, Thrall's a shaman.
No.
Thrall's a shaman. She's a shaman class.
Not she, no. It's a he.
Thrall is like the king of the orcs.
Yeah.
The leader of the hordes, right?
Leader of the horde, yeah.
Yeah, but in this case, the shaman is Thrall.
Okay.
And then there's a big orc.
It's not what you should
do not know enough about WoW lore to be able to have this conversation.
Nah, that might be right.
Yeah. Well, anyways, and those are classes, and you pick a class... And you make a deck with those class cards and these neutral cards. You have, you know, you have summons. I have summoning sickness, and just fight.
Tell them about the crafting.
And then what's nice about this game is that, you know, well, there's this, you know, card packs. You get to pull cards, and if you don't get the card you want, you can actually make the card. You can make legendaries.
That's actually very nice in card games because you can never cherry pick the cards you want. They always want you to suck you in with the packs. And this has given you the ability to create the card.
What we talked about. If you want to make that super rare, they have different rarities. Common, rare, epic, and legendary. If you want to make that legendary card, you just have to turn in 640 commons.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's yours.
No problem.
What troubles me is the interval in which you will be spending money.
Yeah.
I want my games to be... You know, I invest some fixed amount, and then that's the game I get, and I don't have to continually pay for it.
See,
it's just, my understanding that you don't have to continually pay for it. Is that that?
Yeah, well, you have to do the daily,
the fun things.
Quest.
Yeah, no. Here's the thing. I know Chris. He doesn't like. You know, like I think you're dreading the PvP aspect.
Well, I don't like waiting for other people to take their turns, especially when they can't decide, and I have to wait a long time. So almost every card game, I'm like, just take your turn.
Yeah, it only happens like, I don't know. It's for me, I say like, you know, maybe 10% of the time. It might be a lot, but and other times, you know, it's like, yeah.
They have a handy dandy emote for that too. Hurry up.
No, they don't have the hurry up emote. Oh. That's automatic. If you're taking long, your character will emote to remind you like, hey, hurry up. But no, the thing
is, you clicking that. Hurry up.
Like, what's nice is that when you can see them pulling cards out of their hand, highlighting and selecting your targets, you know, there's some mind game there too.
Right.
But there are other times where, like, yeah, like, oh, I've already destroyed all your cards. Just cast something already.
But the sealed deck thing and that seems like a big part of it is a costed entry.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much draw that is. Is that the only mode that's going to be worth playing?
That's the mode I like to play because it's just an extra 100 gold gets you a card pack, you know, 5 cards. Or I pay 150 gold to play an arena, get some games in, level my classes, and at the end, you know, I get a card pack.
So I have a question on that. How often would you go into the arena then? How hard is it to get the 150 gold?
That's a problem. That's, you know, the hindrance, the paywall, right? Mm-hmm. It costs 150 gold, and daily quests give you 40 gold. And PvP gives you 1 gold per game.
Oh, my God.
You're rewarded 5 gold. Every 5 gold, you get the reward. So every 5 games, you get 5 gold. So you play 150 PvP games, and then you have enough to go into the arena.
And so you what's do the daily quest.
What's the daily quest like?
110 PvP games, yeah, and you do the daily quest.
So I found secret achievements, right? I got 300 gold for playing 300 games.
Yeah, but those achievements are one-time things.
So yeah, they're one-time. There might be other achievements too. But yeah, that's the the problem is like I'm saving up for these arena games, and then like I was showing Scott, right? I played an arena game, had 6 wins, and then lost. After you get lose 3 times, you're knocked out, or you have 9 wins, you get knocked out, and you get rewards based on how many wins you got.
Plus, some of the rewards from the arena are gold itself.
Yeah.
So he was able to get
like 135 gold,
135 gold back.
Plus my card pack.
But if you like,
but I guess it's like a chicken and an egg kind of a thing.
Well, no, is it like? I'm blanking on a game that does this, but is it like everyone puts their money into the pool and then a few people take most of the money and everyone else just has to get in?
It's just random rewards.
It's random rewards.
Okay,
random
so rewards. If you win, well, they're you don't necessarily get like all your investment back.
No. I mean, it sounds like there's you get a scale cards and you plus get gold. Better rewards the more you win.
Yeah, like this is what happened. Okay, I've won 9 games and then I was rewarded with 150 gold pack. You get 5 different rewards. 2 of those rewards were card packs, so I got my money's worth in a way. I got like 100 dust and like a 60 and a 40, and then I got 150 gold pack. So I got my money back. When I played, what I showed Scott was I had left with 6 wins, and I got 130. I got 1 card pack, no dust, and 100. The other 4 gold things added up to 135 gold.
So that's pretty good. I mean,
basically
you got but a card
won,
pack for
he won pretty 85. Well, right? You
yeah,
6 out
6
of,
wins
of how many?
Three losses, and I finished
6 out of
so
9.
So 9?
Yeah,
6
okay. out of 9. So I mean, he did pretty well. He won more than half of his games.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we were calculating it when you just win 3 games or something like that, the break even point.
Yeah, so this is a beta, right? So what I did with my 300 gold originally is I went in with I paid 150 gold. And I forfeited the game. I mean, I just left the arena and said, I forfeit, give me my winnings rewards right now. And I got 20 gold, like a 5, a 10, and some dust. I don't know, and the card pack.
Yeah, card pack.
Then I played a game. I won once. And then I left the arena with my one thing. And I got, I forgot what I said, like 40 gold instead.
Yeah. I mean, and it was a card slightly pack better.
Yeah, and some dust.
But even like the lowest one, right? I mean, if you just value everything that's there, it was a card pack, which is 100 gold
worth,
plus, what did you say?
20 gold.
20 gold, right. So that's 120 gold. So you've lost 30 gold, but you got some dust too.
I think I might have got some dust. I don't remember
what
I
said. The thing exactly. is, he's also saying you're not guaranteed a card pack.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
You're
right.
It was
20 gold and 5 dust.
Right, you're not guaranteed. But my point is that, I mean, like, you get something, and it's not like you lose a lot.
So, yeah. Just saying, how long is the interval? Like, is it every other day you can go into the arena?
No, but my point is that it's not self-sustaining, right? If you get a gold, a card pack, yes, you got something that was worth the money you want, but you still spent the money, and there's no way to get that money back.
Yeah.
Well, there isn't a reasonable way to get
that
money back.
I've spent 150
injecting
gold.
More cash.
Yeah, I spent 150 gold, and I got back 20 gold. That will not let me play in sealed deck again.
Right.
So I can just make new decks and play PvP, regular PvP games.
Or do the daily, right?
And do the daily quest.
Or wait for the next day.
It sounds
for the
like,
daily.
I mean, the daily quest is the way to do it, because if you get 40 gold, you just have to do 3 dailies. Or over
the
3 days.
Over 3 days.
Arena,
right, and then
once
you
every 3 days? What if you want to sit down and play it like 3 times and you got to like save
up
your money
all
the time?
Sealed deck is the limiting factor. You can still play PvP games. What kind of rewards do they give you? You know, they help you with your dailies, or you get to play the game. You don't unlock anything. You get 1 gold per game.
But, I mean, they're not restricting you from playing. Yeah. It's just the
sealed
deck. Yeah,
but I understand where Chris is coming from, because when I play a game, I sort of like want to see the rewards. I want to see some payback.
Yeah, so I've been playing Scrolls, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't enjoy it. And I've never purchased a card, because they give you these starter decks, like the green deck, the red deck, the blue deck.
Yeah.
And they cost 6,500 gold. And I have about 4,000 gold now, and I get about 200 gold per game. And I want to buy all the 3 basic starters before I buy any actual like individual cards. So right now I'm just playing the game, grinding, getting gold to earn the starters.
What do you start with?
Nothing.
How do you play games like of Scrolls without any?
You start with one of the starters.
Oh, okay.
So
you're trying to collect all the other starters.
I'm trying to collect all the other starters. So I'm not getting any sort of feedback loop. Like, I'm not getting any rewards for playing. I'm just amassing money, saving money for something else. And it's not fun.
No, that's my problem with Hearthstone as well. Because I'm only getting 40 gold from the daily quests. So I play my 2 daily quests are like win 2 games as a priest, win 2 games as a warrior, mm-hmm. win 5 games as any class. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, those are fun. Like, I get to play a priest deck, and, you know, I make this wacky priest deck, and like, oh, this is cool. I got my 2 wins. I got my 40 gold. But now, well, in this case, I like my priest deck. I kept on playing PvP, just PvP games, just for fun. But there are times where, okay, I want to play an arena, but I don't have the gold, so I'm just going to wait till tomorrow to see, get another 40 gold.
Or you could pay.
Like, or everyone, I could pay $2,
everyone
yes.
is just like thinking mm-hmm. this game, like, how do you play this game for free?
Yeah.
And have it be fun.
Yeah.
But if it was really, like, you know, the way you wanted it, then Blizzard wouldn't make any money.
Yeah, well, exactly.
No.
I come from a free-to-play realm where I try to do my best with, you know, staying within free-to-play.
I want a happy medium. Money. I want a costed system that won't get exponentially large costs. I mean, they won't, like, if you live your life on mm-hmm. nanopods in Battle Nations, you'd go broke. You'd spend hundreds of dollars.
You don't want it to become an addiction.
Yeah, you know, in a way, I'll compare this to League of Legends. You know, you're getting IP, and you can, you know, eventually spend that IP on the champions you want and everything. Here, you know, over time, you know, each game you play is 1 gold equivalent. Okay, every 5 games you play is 5 gold. 100 games will get you a card pack, so you're drawing 5 cards. You know, you play, and fortunately, that's what another reason
why
the games are streamlined. Mm-hmm. They're streamlined.
How long do they take to play? How long?
5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's short.
That's short.
But that's 500 minutes.
Well, it's
if
true.
If you're going to go that
but
route,
I think, see, the
daily
thing about,
quest shortened that.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, the daily quests, I think, are important. Yeah. They're worth 40 games.
Yeah, they're worth 40 games. 2 games for 40 games. And you can spend money. You can pay $2 to play in the arena. You could buy 2 card packs for $3.
The thing is, it's
$2
it's an addiction.
For 45 minutes of entertainment. To maybe an hour
$2
and a half.
To at most, yeah, no.
9 games, 5
3
minutes.
Games minimum in arena. 3 games minimum.
So 15 to 90 minutes of entertainment for $2.
Yeah.
So after...
Plus the cards.
Plus the rewards, yeah.
So after 20 hours, this game is now a $60 game. Or $30.
$2.
30 hours, this game is now a $60 game. And then after 90 hours, it's now...
So the answer to that is no, because you're saying that you're losing every single time, right?
Oh, that's true. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, let's
so,
say...
I mean, okay, so cut it... Double, you know, maybe you're...
No, you just double it. Yeah, let's say you win, you know, right? But also, you're discounting the fact that you don't have to spend money in order to actually go into the arena, mm-hmm. right? Like, you're only going to be doing that every so often, not every time.
Well, because you will still have money. Because you're not going to get that seed money.
Right, and you're going to get the daily money, and you're going to get some money back every time
and
you play.
My restriction is, my free-to-play restriction is that I want to make the use of my dailies, right? Like dailies, win 2 games as a priest... So I go into arena and I want to select the priest so that, you know, I play the arena games and it feeds into the daily.
If you can bring yourself to play this game the way the game wants you to play it, then...
How do they want you to play it?
Well, they want you to play it spaced out day to day, right? They one game a day and then every three days you play in the arena.
My question is, like, let's say the draft deck mode arena didn't actually exist. It would still be a totally viable game, right?
Yeah,
it would be like a game that you could play other people, PvP, you know,
but the feedback loop would be so extreme that it wouldn't be fun.
Well,
to me.
Why? Every let's say if you do the dailies,
100 games I get 5 cards.
Every 3 days you get 5 cards if you do the dailies.
All right, if you can bring yourself to play it in the way they want, which is every 3 days, you know, you play one mm-hmm. game a day for 3 days in a row.
It's more like 2 games a day because you have to win two games as a priest or
if I'm losing, I mean, at least have a goal so I might
exactly.
There's a feedback loop like
quests are better
games.
Than just playing for no, you know, just sitting there and
but if
playing.
I have 2 you know, if I have 2 hours to play on Friday and no one on Saturday and Sunday and I play for 10 minutes and I've accomplished everything that I'm going to get rewards for on Friday, mm-hmm. and then I just waste that other 2 hours and then never get, you know, don't I
see,
have to play the way the game wants me to play.
Yeah. If you're not having fun, if you can't just, you know, plop down a deck and play PvP with somebody, then you're not enjoying the game by itself.
Yeah.
That's already a problem.
I agree.
Yeah. So that's why, I mean, for me, like, I'm struggling with the free-to-play aspect because I want to be efficient.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm playing a lot of games because I actually
enjoy
the game. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like that you can only hold three cards or whatever.
Three cards? What are you talking about?
That is definitely true of me. There are some games that I don't like mechanically, and I look to the campaign aspect to provide the entertainment value.
Yeah, because, I mean, the problem with PvE, because this game has the PvE aspect, is I consider that just a tutorial. They force you, you know, you play these classes, you have to beat, you start with a mage deck in the beta, and you get the other decks by beating the AI.
Right.
And you level up those decks just to get the rest of their starter cards. And then once you cap out, that you're done.
Yeah, the Dota tutorial's like that. Like, the enemy champions don't attack you. You're like, this is so simple. This is not even a challenge. And
well, aren't they trying to teach you like the fundamentals, which are like last hitting and stuff?
No. I mean, they are introducing that stuff to you. But
it's because
they're at this point where I am, you're forced to play 10 different champions so that you learn
the types of champions.
They give you 20 and you pick 10, but you're supposed to learn a variety of champions and explore the champion set a little bit.
So I have a question for Scott, though. What were you saying about three cards?
I saw you guys were only holding three cards normally on that.
Yeah, you start with three cards.
Right.
So the second player going second starts with an extra card, and you draw one card a turn.
Right.
So, and the thing is,
it seems like in Magic you had like seven cards.
You start with seven cards, but you're still drawing one card a turn.
Right, but and you blew your wad, and then you had no cards really fast.
If you decide to blow your wad, and that's the thing about Hearthstone, is like once I blow my wad, then I have no surprises for the enemy. And that's the other thing. That's a lot of mind games. That's what I like about it. It's like, I want to hold this card, even though I want to play this card, because there's secrets, like counters. And then, I mean, there are also ways to draw extra cards. I had a deck, my priest deck, that was drawing a lot of cards every time I healed. And I actually emptied my deck while they had 16 cards left in their deck.
Is that an end game condition?
No. Yeah, if you can't draw a card, you take a damage. The next time you can't draw a card, you take two damage. And increases. So it's called fatigue. So if I'm supposed to draw a third card, then I take three damage. So I've taken six damage from this. Very slowly, the priest can. Huh. Yeah, but I was able to beat my opponent. I was just really surprised that I had no cards to draw and they had 16 left. So I went through my cards really fast.
The game I saw, it just seemed like there were no cards. So I don't know.
Saw the game where I blew my load. I had no cards, and the Janna had the mage had four cards in their deck.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's this four cost card that's a 1/1 creature that says you get plus attack and health equal to the number of cards that you have in your hand. So except I had a card that said silence, which blanks out your text. So they turned back into a 1/1. Yeah. I don't know. I really enjoy the game when you get the combos.
Just held that card. It would have been a 1/1 anyway.
Anyway. Yeah. So this is the combos, the comebacks, and just the surprises that come from the game.
Okay. Well, if you've enjoyed this show, give us a review on iTunes. Or just share that you listened to this podcast with somebody else.
Tweeting is great.
Tweeting, Facebook, anything. Spread the word.
Email us that you actually listen to this show.
Yeah, there you go. Just let us know that we're doing a good job. That's it. That's it for today, and we will see you next month with Crusader Kings 2. Goodbye from 10HP.
Good night.
Yep.
Thank you.